If I could have you take your seats, we'll go ahead and begin.
Absolutely. I'll probably come with one of you.
Do we have any Boy Scouts this evening? Any past Eagle Scouts? Ralph, were you an Eagle Scout? Mr. Pugh?
You had a gentleman right here, racist.
Boy Scout?
Eagle
Scout. What's your name?
Bill
Thompson. Bill? I'll be leading us in the Pledge of Allegiance this evening. All right, let's start with an invocation by Dr. James Adams from the Cornerstone Church, followed by a prior Eagle Scout. Please stand.
Let's bow for prayer. Our Father, we are thankful that we can bow in your presence. We do thank you that we live in such a wonderful city. We thank you for those who serve faithfully in the city council here. We are thankful for those who watch out for our safety, both as we would think of the Police Department of Mesa and the Fire Department and many others that give of themselves in a sacrificial way. We thank you for the peace that we have. We pray that you'd give wisdom to those who are the leaders of this city. We thank you for Mayor Hawker and all those who work with him. We would ask that they would have that wisdom from above, that we would have a city that would have a peaceful working together of all the different ethnic backgrounds and peoples, and that we would have a place that we can enjoy your goodness and your grace together. We ask for your blessing upon this meeting in the name of the one who is the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before you go, thanks. I've been around here a number of years, and I really appreciate you coming forward year after year and doing the invocation, so thank you very much. All right. Okay, the next item will be the reading of the consent agenda. I do want to make an announcement as we're getting ready to do that, that on items 10A through F, which is the issues that deal with the wave yard, the public hearing, and then the zoning cases, the development incentives, I'd like to have that addressed. You can pick whichever one, 10A through F, you'd like to talk on, but I'd like to concentrate the discussion on 10A because I think it's a lot of overlap. I'm going to try to give a little additional time instead of having cards filled out for every one of those separate items. If I could try to get everyone to focus on 10A, and then I'll try to also allocate some additional time so you'll have plenty of time to talk at the public hearing, comments on the minor general plan amendment and all the different nuances that Wave Yard creates with some of the different resolutions that we need to pass for development tax incentives, agreement to sell and lease city property, and the retail tax development tax incentives in compliance with some of the state laws. So that would be, if you can concentrate your efforts on 10A for those, it would help the council to expedite our discussions here this evening. So thank you very much for your cooperation in that suggestion. The next item then is the reading of the consent agenda.
Good evening. All citizens are permitted and encouraged to speak on agenda items. If you're interested in speaking on an agenda item, please fill out a blue card in the back of the room and give it to the city clerk. When the council considers the item, you'll be called to the podium to provide your comments. Mayor and council members, these are the items on the consent agenda. All items listed with an asterisk will be considered as a group by the city council and will be enacted with one motion. There will be no separate discussion of these items unless a council member or citizen requests, in which event the item will be removed from the consent agenda and considered as a separate item. If a citizen wants an item removed from the consent agenda, a blue card must be completed and given to the city clerk prior to the council's vote on the consent agenda. Item 2, approval of minutes from previous meetings as written. Item 5A, take action on person transfer bar license for Friendly Irish Pub, 1423 South Country Club Drive, Suite 12. Item 5B, take action on new beer and wine store license for Fresh and Easy Market, 1228 South Sossaman Road. Item 5C, take action on New Beer and Wine Store license for Hacienda Mercado Number 5, 351 North Country Club Drive. Item 5D, take action on new restaurant license for Pasta Baroni, 2905 South Ellsworth Road, Suite 101. Item 5F, take action on new restaurant license for Streets of New York, 1959 South Signal Butte Road, Suite 105. Item 6A, take action on contract for 10 light duty trucks, $258,397.26. Item 6B, take action on contract for additional purchase of coat seal gas pipe, $38,808. Item 6E, take action on contract for re-roof of the Southwest Museum Annex, $50,127. Item 6F, take action on contract for Fleet Support Services West Lighting Renovations, $51,684.60. Item 7A, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Modify rates for water utility services. Item 7B, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Modify rates for wastewater utility services. Item 7C, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Modify rates for natural gas utility services. Item 7D, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Modify rates for solid waste utility services. Item 7E, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Modify the electric energy cost adjustment factor. Item 7F, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Modify terms and conditions for the sale of utility services. Item 7G, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Modify fees and charges for the Financial Services Operations Division. Item 7H, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Amend Mesa City Code pertaining to the landscape rebate program. Item 7I has been deleted. Item 7J, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Amend Mesa City Code pertaining to planning services. Item 7K, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Repeal existing personnel rules and adopting new personnel rules. Item 7L, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z06-97, 11,000 East Pecos Road for industrial offices / warehouses. Item 7M, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-38, 129 North Alma School Road for a rezone. Item 7N, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-39, 9,000 East Southern Avenue for an office and two restaurants. Item 7O, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-42, 9641 East Hampton for two medical office buildings. Item 7P, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-44, 11537 East Warner Road for a two-story indoor self-storage facility. Item 7Q, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-45, 10630 East Pecos Road for two buildings. Item 7R, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-46, 6759 East Albany Street for an office building. Item 7S, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-47, 10600 East Southern Avenue for retail shopping center. Item 7T, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-49, 1166 North Alma School Road for a four-story hotel and restaurant. Item 7U, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-50, 14207 South Power Road for retail buildings to include a Goodwill store. Item 7V, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Zoning case Z07-54, 1300 East Baseline Road for a new self-storage building. Item 7W, introduce ordinance for June 25th. Amend Mesa City Code pertaining to the residential development tax. Item 8A, take action on resolution to modify fees and charges for Falcon Field Airport. Item 8B, take action on resolution to modify fees and charges for Parks, Recreation, and Commercial Facilities Department. Item 8C, take action on resolution to modify fees and charges for the library. Item 8D, take action on resolution to modify fees and charges for Code Compliance Division. Item 8G, take action on resolution to modify fees and charges for the Mesa Art Center and Arizona Museum for Youth. Item 8H, take action on resolution for contract for legal services. Item 8B, take action on ordinance to amend Mesa City Code relating to residential alley roadways. Item 9C, take action on ordinance, zoning case Z07-36, 10100 East Southern Avenue to add a freestanding daycare facility. Item 9D, take action on ordinance, zoning case Z07-37, 6659 East University Drive for a rezone. Item 11A, take action on subdivision plat, Ivy Glen Condominiums, 1645 North Date Street. Item 11B, take action subdivision plat, Superstition Springs Commerce Center, 7200 East Hampton Avenue. Item 11C, take action subdivision plat, Abella Court, 3135 South East Ridge. Mayor and council members, those were the items on the consent agenda.
Okay. Do we have any requests to remove any items read into the consent agenda?
We do not, Mayor. The record can stand as read.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion then. I have one motion by Councilmember Summers, seconded by Vice Mayor Walters for approval of the consent. Would you please vote? The vote is unanimous in favor of the ayes. The first one that we need to talk about is going to be on page 2, and that is to conduct a public hearing on the proposed fiscal year 2007-2008 budget plan. So, are there any requests to speak on the public hearing for the?
I have none, Mayor.
All right. Did anyone come this evening to address the council on our proposed 07-08 budget plan? We've had lots of different study sessions going over to different departments and trying to put this together. So, all right, seeing none, I'll go ahead and close it. Yeah, item number 4 is take action on the tentative adoption of the proposed fiscal year 2007-2008 budget plan. Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. I hereby move that we tentatively adopt the legal three-page budget for the City of Mesa for the fiscal year 2007-2008 in the amount of $998,245,505 for the operating portion and $231,015,082 for scheduled bond capital improvements for a total city budget appropriation of $1,229,260,587.
Right. There's a motion by the Vice Mayor and seconded by myself on this item. Discussion by Council. All right. Would you please vote? Okay. The vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. The next item then will be on page 3. This will be item 6C. And I own a... I own some property and equipment that I lease to potential subcontractors for this type of work. This concerns some asphalt pavement work, so I will declare that as a potential conflict and refrain from discussion and voting and turn it over to the Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Whalen.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. I'll be declaring a conflict also. Several members of the Nesbitt family, if not the business, are customers of my security company.
Thank you. This project is the 2006-2007 street improvements, Brown Road from Greenfield Road to Wrecker Road. This project will include approximately 83,000 square yards of asphalt, pavement and reconstruction, replacement of damaged sidewalks, sidewalk ramps, adjustment of utilities, and miscellaneous street improvement. It's recommended that the award go to the low bidder, Nesbitt Contracting, for a total award of $2,207,547.10. The funding is available from the transportation sales tax funds. Are there any requests to speak on this item?
Vice Mayor, I have none.
All right. I have a motion for approval by Councilmember Griswold, seconded by Councilmember Summers. Is there any council discussion on this? All right. Seeing none, would you please vote? The motion carries with 5 ayes, the Mayor and Councilmember Whalen abstaining because of potential conflict of interest.
The next item is on page 4. This is a wastewater manhole rehabilitation project. And when they rehabilitate a manhole, they sometimes pave around it. So I have another conflict on this one in that I own property and equipment that may be subcontracted out for this type of work. So I'll refrain from discussion and voting. Vice Mayor?
Thank you, Mayor. This is wastewater manhole rehabilitation project to rehabilitate 26 wastewater manholes that have deteriorated below acceptable condition. It's recommended that the award go to the low bidder, Joseph Painting Company, JPCI, Inc., in the amount of $435,619.80, and the funding is available in the approved capital budget utilizing wastewater bonds. Do I have any requests to speak on this item?
None, Vice Mayor.
I have a motion for approval by Councilmember Griswold, seconded by Councilmember Summers. Is there any council discussion on this item? All right, would you please vote? The motion carries with 6 ayes and the Mayor abstaining because of a potential conflict of interest.
Okay. Next item would be on page 10, item 8E, and this is modifying fees and charges for the engineering department as recommended by the Audit and Finance Committee. It came with a 2-to-1 vote from Audit and Finance with Councilmember Rawls voting nay, and so it was pulled so that I think he can be consistent with his subcommittee votes. So do we have, I have a motion by Councilmember Walters for approval, seconded by Councilmember Whalen. Any requests to speak?
I have none, Mayor.
Okay. Then would you please vote? Vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. Similar item is modifying fees. This is 8F, modifying fees and charges for the Building Safety Division, as recommended by the Audit and Finance Committee. Again, it was a 2-to-1 vote, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. I have a motion by Councilmember Walters for approval, seconded by Councilmember Jones. Any requests to speak?
I have none, Mayor.
Okay, would you please vote? Vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. Next item is on page 11. This is 9A. This is amending Title 5, Chapter 17 of the Mesa City Code relating to development impact fees to adopt new impact fees. I have one request to speak from Lauren Barnett. Lauren, do you want to address the council? Oh, I'm sorry. I do not wish to speak on this item, but I am opposition. I should have read it. All right. Are there any other requests to speak on this item?
I have none, Mayor.
All right. You need to fill out a blue card to do so.
Oh, I did, but can I speak on this too? I just have a question.
All right, please.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. No.
The question I have is, when they say impact fees, if you already have a home there where you're taking up, you know, sewer, water, and all that other things, and you tear down your home or you have a fire or whatever, do you have new impact fees, or is it just for new places?
It's primarily for new places, unless you'd upgrade the size of your service.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
So if you go from a 3/4-inch line to a 1-inch, then there would be an impact fee, but if you stay with the 3/4, use the same amount of sewer and water, there would be no impact fees.
Would it be a full $16,000 or whatever the huge amount is?
No, each individual item is separately accounted for, water, sewer, gas, so there's different impact fees for different aspects.
Okay, so it's not going to be a huge amount for old residents?
It won't be anything for old residents if you, again, if you keep the same size service that you had before. Correct, okay. From staff?
Thanks.
All right. Okay. Any other questions or comments? All right. Then entertain a motion on this item. We have a motion for approval by Councilmember Jones, seconded by Councilmember Whalen. I'm going to be completely in favor of the new impact fees. This is just it's changing our nomenclature a little bit to cost recovery on what it costs in today's prices to build those new treatment plants and water lines and such. And it's abandoning an old practice where we averaged and somebody that came into the city could get the advantage of what it used to cost because we weren't quite at capacity. So I like the new way of calculating them. It does increase the dollar magnitude, but I think it's a way of making sure that new growth does pay for itself. So I will be supporting. All right. Okay, would you please vote? Tom?
I'm sorry, I just wanted to say that there's two reasons why I'm voting no on this. First of all, it does include a component of cultural impact fees, and although the amount is actually going down, voting for that decrease would still imply a support for the cultural impact fees, and I don't think they are justified, authorized by the statute. And secondly, when all of us moved here, growth didn't pay for itself. It was the cost that was spread throughout the community. So I think it's unfair to all of a sudden, I don't mean all of a sudden, I mean, I know it's been going on for a while, but the idea of changing and saying, okay, now those of you who came after a particular date, you're going to have different rules than applied to when I came here and when other people moved here. So for those reasons, I'll vote no.
Okay. Any other council discussion? Okay. Would you please vote? Okay. The vote is 6 ayes and 1 nay, with Councilmember Rawls voting nay. Next item then is on page 12, and this is to discuss and take public comment and take action on the following items regarding the Waveyard Development Project. And item 10A is to conduct a public hearing on minor general plan amendment, and that's general plan amendment 07-06. This is in District 1, and again, this relates to the minor plan amendment 10B, but we also will have 10C, which is a ordinance and zoning case. We have 10D, which is a finding of fact on retail development incentive, tax incentives. There is 10E that also relates to Waveyard, which is agreements to for the sale and lease of city property, and 10F, which is a retail development tax incentive agreement with Waveyard Development LLC. So they're all interrelated on this, and I appreciate everyone's cooperation in trying to get the information concise and do it in one visit. Vice Mayor.
Thank you, Mayor. I'd like to declare a conflict on all of these items. As I have with all discussions on Waveyard, I'm declaring a potential conflict of interest. My daughter-in-law has an ownership interest in her family business that would potentially be in conflict. They own all of the water parks in the valley, and as a result, the existing water parks, as a result, I have declared that conflict. I have refrained from voting or discussion on it, and I will excuse myself from the dais at this point if that's acceptable to you.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. All right. I have several requests to speak. And what we typically do, well, this is the conduct the public hearing. I know we'll also, when we get to the take action on the following resolution and the zoning, I'll call the attorneys or the representatives from Waveyard forward. Let's go ahead and, well, I'm not, would you like to speak and do a little introduction, Ralph?
Mayor, that would be appropriate.
All right, please go ahead.
Yeah, let's put that. Mayor and members of the council, good evening. My name is Ralph Pugh, and my office address is at 1930 East Brown Road in Mesa. It really is a pleasure to be here this evening on behalf of Waveyard Development, and its two principals, Mr. Richard Mladek and Jerry Hugg, are here with me. And it has been a long process getting here tonight, but we are delighted to be here and delighted to bring this project forward. As we begin, let me first of all say, Mayor and Council, that I think it's a good idea to take all agenda items under number 10 and talk about them at once and then deal with them separately. And if that's the way you'd like to do it, that's how we would like to proceed. I'd also like to say, as we begin this presentation this evening, that we want to express our thanks and our appreciation to your staff, who have been very diligent and very professional in their time and their commitment in working through the voluminous documents that you saw and that were made available to the public, and also in dealing with the entitlement issues and all the logistical issues, the engineering, the civil, the traffic, the water, all the issues, the parks, everything that related to this case. So thank you for their effort. Mayor, what we'd like to do this evening is introduce Mr. Richard Mladek and let him take a minute here and walk you and the citizens through the Waveyard project, what it is, an idea of a vignette or two as to what it will look like. Then we'll address the issue of the general plan amendment and the zoning issues being asked for tonight, and then I will address some of the questions that have been raised. If that would be okay with you, Mayor, we can proceed that way. Let me turn some time over to Richard then.
Mayor and council members, thank you very much for having us here tonight. We're excited to be in front of you tonight with this project. We'd like to just take a few minutes and run through what the experience is around Waveyard. It has been commonly misreferred to as a water park, and we'd like to just quickly show how we are different than a conventional water park attraction, or how this project in both size and scale is very different than any other project in town. The location of Waveyard at the confluence of the 101 and 202 freeways is a very, very significant location for the city of Mesa. This has the opportunity to be a gateway project with tremendous synergies with the Bass Pro development, as well as being near ASU, the airport, the light rail, all of the reasons that we all believe that this would be a good location. But in addition, the family-friendly reputation that Mesa has and the community that Mesa is, we are very, very excited about this spot. The components of Waveyard are significant and very different in size and scale than your traditional water park components. The first component we'd like to speak about tonight is the Whitewater Facility. The Whitewater Facility in Waveyard is modeled after the U.S. National Whitewater Center in Charlotte, North Carolina, and it would allow you an opportunity to whitewater raft and kayak in this facility. And starting with this component is significant because this is one of the key differentiators, again, of this project. It is a skilled water sports destination. And as you'll see from some of the slides, these are sports. These are not all passive attractions like water slides. This is the U.S. National Whitewater Center in Charlotte, North Carolina. This facility was completed last year. There is nearly 1 mile of channel in this facility. It is a recirculating whitewater river and is currently the largest recirculating whitewater river in the world. This is the type of facility that we are proposing for the Riverview location. This is the U.S. National Whitewater Center in completion. The last slide you saw was in concept prior to being built. This is it, operational and open today. This is Waveyard's vision for the Riverview property. It is, as you can see, a very similar concept. However, one of the main differences with our proposal versus Charlotte is we are proposing to integrate the Whitewater facility into a resort, residential, retail, office, and educational destination, not into just a standalone Whitewater facility. Again, additional renderings showing the integration of the facilities. Other sports that would be in the project would be boogie boarding, surfing. Again, showing our vision of surfing and how the resort hotel and the retail experience would integrate into the recreational components. A significant beach experience, a snorkeling lagoon. This is a picture of Discovery Cove in Orlando, Florida. We would be very similar in size and scale with our snorkeling attraction to this facility. Scuba diving. Again, showing this rendering illustrates our vision on the integration of these facilities into the resort and retail center, and that's something that we cannot stress strongly enough. There is a massive free public experience with this project. This project has the ability for citizens to come down with no charge and walk along the water attractions, to walk along the whitewater course, to sit outside in an outdoor cafe, enjoy the water, and enjoy the facilities with no cost other than the food that they may purchase. Wakeboarding, climbing. The resort hotel, we have a 400-room resort hotel with a spa and wellness center, a minimum of 30,000 square feet of conference space in there, and an indoor water park as a part of the resort hotel. This is a slide to allow people to understand the scale of what we're talking about, because we think that this is frequently misunderstood. On the left, you will see Disneyland, which you can see we are not as large as Disneyland in Anaheim. However, looking at Discovery Cove in the center of the page, Legoland on the right, and SeaWorld at the bottom right, you will see this project is a regional destination on the size and scale of these type of facilities. And I think that is often and frequently lost when it is referred to as a water park. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Richard. Mayor and Council, how then do we implement the Waveyard project through land use changes in the general plan and in the zoning categories? As we sit here tonight, the land currently is owned by three different entities, the City of Mesa, Maricopa County, and the Larry Miller Auto Dealerships Group. And it is zoned and it is in the general plan for public, semi-public purposes. In order to implement this plan, it's necessary to change our city's general plan to what we call mixed-use residential. The mixed-use residential is an element in our general plan that allows for commercial land use designations with residential elements of those designations. And so with this particular general plan category, we can then, or you can, as council members, can consider rezoning the property to C3 and establishing a council use permit on the property for residential elements of the plan. Here's the zoning that exists today as a public facilities district, and the proposed zoning is the general commercial 3C, C3 category. Now, in order to fully create the land use patterns that will set the framework for the ultimate development of the site, it's necessary to establish what we call a development master plan overlay on the property. Frankly, we don't see those as much as we used to in the city of Mesa. Development master plans were a very popular tool in years past when there were large acreages that either had conceptual zoning and that the development master plan set the stage for future growth, or that was used to determine how a future site plan would lay out and be designed. That's exactly what's happening here. We're asking that the land be zoned to C3 and that you establish this master plan on the property. And as you can see here, there's various different land use categories. Item number 2, which is the bulk of the property there, is the whitewater experience and all of the other sports attractions that Mr. Mladic just explained to everyone. The other areas have to do with the indoor water park, item number 1. The resort hotel is number 3. Number 4 is really the combined use of retail and residential, and parcels 6 and 7 uniquely combine office elements with high-rise residential units on top of that. So that's how the plan is implemented. Those areas designated as number 5 are parking fields. And when you begin a plan like this, it's absolutely critical to start with this beginning phase. We have been criticized somewhat in this process for not having more detail. Well, quite frankly, we're working on the detailed site plan that will come forward. But to set the framework and the guidelines for future development, this is what we do. This map also has parcel number 8 designated on it. We showed that for convenience because that represented the reconfigured city park at Dobson and 8th Street. Technically not a part of the master plan, but we wanted to show it where it was and make sure everyone could understand that. So we're looking for a development master plan overlay with those configurations. Two other things are necessary then, Mayor and Council members, to implement the plan. This exhibit represents what we call a bonus intensity zone. Our city code has a specific provision that allows for the city council to approve increases in the height of structures given their unique character and design elements. We've taken the entire plan and designated those areas where there will be deviations from height requirements. If you look here at parcel A again represents all of the water experiences that are outdoor. What we've asked for there is for the council to approve a 70-foot limit for those outdoor attractions. There certainly will be areas where the whitewater experience will have to be elevated. There'll be areas where there'll be cabling mechanisms and other structures that are necessary to make all of what Mr. Mladic explained function and work. And to do that, we need the extra height into that category. The area marked is item C, kind of down there on 8th Street. That represents the indoor water park that will be an integral component to the resort hotel. And we are asking for the approval of 5 stories or up to 65 feet for that building. That again exceeds the typical commercial designation there. Areas marked in B represent those components that we would expect to vary in height anywhere from the minimum of 2 stories to the maximum of 10 stories or 150 feet. So this exhibit begins to give you kind of a feel for the massing of what will happen on the site. And as you saw in some of the vignettes that were presented, you can see how the water courses through the uses where we have commercial and residential in a structure in a vertical nature, or office and residential in a vertical nature. Same thing happens also with the resort hotel more towards 8th Street. So this is another request that we have from a land use point of view. And when you consider and adopt a zoning ordinance, you will actually be making a recommendation, or making a vote, I should say, on these height requirements and limitations. This exhibit represents what we call the council use permit portion of the entitlements. These are the areas of the plan that will have residential elements to them. And so it will be necessary also for you to approve a council use permit so that those elements can be incorporated into the plan and we can truly get a mixed-use project here. These exhibits and landscape concepts represent the ideas that we had along 8th Street. We know that it's critical to create a proper buffer and landscaping techniques on 8th Street. This one is looking westbound on 8th. You have the project to the right-hand side of the exhibit, and this one is looking eastbound with the project on the left-hand side. These design elements were presented to the Planning and Zoning Board, to the staff, as design concepts for the landscaping there. I'll explain to you what happens with these in connection with the Lineal Park here in just a second. Now, anytime you deal with height increases and changing and modifying our standard code requirements, it's important to begin to get a feel for the elevations and the design characteristics of the buildings. We tend to theme this project and give it a concept of a Mediterranean European coastal feel. That's the architecture we want to develop. That's the style and technique we want to bring forward. These represent 3, 5, and 7-story buildings that would have office and residential uses on them. These are larger buildings that represent 5 and 7-story structures with the commercial and residential on them. We have provided these elevations as illustrations both to the staff, to you as council, and to the public to have a feel for where we're headed with this. Please keep in mind, Mayor and Council, that there is a clear condition in the zoning ordinance that requires us to go back to the site plan process, come back to you for formal approval of the site plan and formal design review board approval for the project. If I could answer a few questions now, Mayor, those are the land use entitlements. A few questions have come up with respect to this project that we'd like to address and then reserve some time if necessary to respond to questions that may come from citizens tonight. One of the questions that has come up has to do with the value of the land. You are also considering tonight a development agreement that has as a part of it the sale of this land to the Wave Yard Development Group. The question has arisen, what is the value of this land, and are we as citizens selling this land, or are you as council members approving a sales price that is too low? The answer to that question, I'm sure many of you have thought about that and have been asked that issue. If the only goal tonight were to maximize the sales price of this land, you would probably be looking at some alternative uses. You would sell this for other things like an auto dealership. Perhaps sand and gravel operations, quite frankly, are very, very profitable. There may be other ways to maximize the sales price, but that's not been the objective of this council or of Wave Yard. What we have understood from both citizen input that happened when Mr. Miller wanted to expand his auto dealership, it was emphatically stated that's not going to happen. So then how do you sell and value a piece of property that has constraints on it, both from a use point of view as to what might be acceptable to this council for that location and the community, and the physical constraints this site has? This site has a sewer treatment plant on it. It's got multiple easements for sewer lines going all through the place. And it is, let's face it, in a rather strange configuration. It's not a nice rectangle or a perfect square. It presents various challenges to designing this particular project, or any other project for that matter. In addition, there were appraisals that were done of this property that clearly demonstrate that the value set forth in the purchase agreement of $30 million is a fair and reasonable price for this property under all of the circumstances. Another question has come up that unfortunately has to do with the exhibits that you've been presented, and that has to do with the criticism of us in this process that the configuration of the city park has changed from time to time during this process. The answer to that question is this. The development master plan that you see on the screen right now was the plan that we showed at the neighborhood meetings. It is also the plan that we showed to the Planning and Zoning Board. And the unique thing about this is, if you'll notice on parcel number 8, let's see if I can get this pointer, right here is a road that goes north from 8th Street into the Waveyard project, and it separates the park that we had planned to have right there. One of the early criticisms that we received was, that's not a very good idea. Don't separate two elements of the park by an entry road. So we took that comment and really paid attention to it. And we then, in our minds, have reconfigured how that park would look. And it manifested itself in this particular exhibit. This exhibit was the notice of intent exhibit that went out under the statutorily required notice for the economic incentive issue that's being discussed tonight. We at that time had thought in our minds and had worked with the staff on the idea of configuring the park in such a way as to minimize that conflict with the road going into the park and to keep the acreage that is usable in that park today the same as what it will be when we're finished. And a natural outgrowth of that then became, why don't we extend a lineal park along 8th Street, which frankly is in addition to the acreage needed to keep the park in its current acreage size. Let me demonstrate that to you with this exhibit. Today, this is the park. This is an aerial view, and what's shaded in kind of a pale green there represents what we'll call green space within the usable park. It has the soccer fields, it has the lake, it has the ramadas, the sand area, all of the usable areas are there, and the acreage is 21.1 acres. Taking that and reconfiguring it slightly, this is what the park would look like under our plan when we come back for final site plan approval, and for the benefit of the public here tonight, in the purchase contract, there is a specific requirement that we enter into a park agreement with the city as to the design of the park, the amenities in the park, how it gets improved. All those issues are still to be worked out in detail. But you notice the configuration here. This is 22.2 acres. So all the green space that we are saving and usable space within the park is more than what exists today. And the lineal park that goes along 8th Street, we think, is a great amenity, an addition to what integrates the park with Waveyard. And frankly, we as Waveyard are prepared to improve it and maintain it, even though it's owned by the city. If you as council members or the citizens tonight oppose that lineal park, then tell us you want to get rid of it. We'll just landscape it like a normal landscape entry to our project. But we think it has the potential for a real nice addition to the park. And in fact, with the additional acreage that we're having here, as you can now see on this exhibit where you put them side by side, there is enough acreage here to keep the green space the same, plus provide for parking, and the lineal park is in addition to those requirements. Mayor and Council, a couple more quick things, and then I'll be quiet. You've heard about the water. The issue with respect to water is that this project will typically utilize less water than an 18-hole golf course. We have also met some criticism for saying that. We've never said that Riverview Golf Course is an 18-hole course, although we've been criticized for that. It's a 9-hole course. We're simply saying that the water usage, quite frankly, for our project is not going to be significantly different than an 18-hole course, and quite frankly, not a whole lot different than what the current 9-hole course is using today. With respect to traffic, we have had traffic studies prepared. There are improvements to 5 different areas of this project. If necessary, in response, I can go through all of those with you, but I'd like the public and the council to know tonight that the intersections, the traffic signals, the additional turning lanes, all those items have been worked out with your traffic department, and we have agreed to those improvements. We've also been subject to some criticism about crime and property values. Our view of that is very simple. When this project develops, and there is on site the resort hotel that is a triple diamond, 4-star mobile rating equivalent, and you have the security that goes with a hotel and resort of that nature, and the amenities of this project, security will never be better than it will be under those circumstances. And we view this as kind of a halo effect in the whole area. Once this project is built with its quality, everything tends to rise and tends to improve. And that's what we think we're bringing to the community. I'd like to also mention, for the benefit of the public, what's going to happen to the park and the ball fields if this project doesn't happen? Are we going to tear those down as a city and get rid of them and then have this not occur? Quite frankly, that's not happening, Mayor and Council members. The contract for the purchase of the land says this: we cannot close this transaction until we have final site plan approval from you as City Council, final design review board approval, and we've actually purchased the permits for the first initial phase of minimum improvements, and we've proven to the city manager, to his satisfaction, that there is financial capacity and capability to complete the project. Then, when we close the transaction and you give us a deed to the property, you put restrictions on that deed that limit its use to what we're talking about tonight, and that has reversionary provisions if we don't perform. Finally, Mayor and Council, you have to make two findings tonight. Under the statute, to execute the development agreement with tax incentives, you must find, in your own mind, that the tax incentive that you are offering is less than the benefit to the city. The city will benefit more than the tax incentive. You have received a detailed economic study from Applied Economics that addresses that issue. Won't go into that here in any detail now, but it's very clear that it happens and that that test is met. But there's a much simpler test for that, and it's this: of every sales tax dollar that comes from this project and that is generated here through the Waveyard, the city gets more sales tax than the developer does in the economic incentive rebate. To me, that's pretty simple math and a pretty easy way to look at it. Let me conclude, if I can, Mayor, by asking Jerry Hugg to conclude with the second finding. You must also find that absent the economic incentive, this project would not be built here and now and under these circumstances. Let me invite Jerry to come up and address that, and before he does, think about this also. This project is going to a vote of the citizens of Mesa under our charter. Frankly, Mayor and Council members and citizens present here tonight, this transaction could have been structured in a way that did not require a vote. It could have hidden a few issues here and there, or obfuscated this, or kind of moved something over here. It could have been done, and it could have been avoided. Our view as Waveyard is this: we want to do the right thing, and we think that is go to a vote of the public. And so it's structured as a very straightforward issue that requires a vote under Section 613 of the Charter, and we're excited about that, for the citizens of Mesa to approve this agreement. Jerry, can you explain why the incentive is necessary to build this project here and now?
Sure. Mayor Hawker, members of the council, with respect to the second finding of fact, for us at Waveyard, and hopefully after I'm done articulating it for all of you, the matter will be very straightforward. If you recall the exhibit that Mr. Pugh showed earlier, as it relates to the development master plan, what you need to take into consideration is that master plan consists of what we call at Waveyard very traditional, very straightforward, very historically well funded and well proven businesses. And what I'm referring to are specifically the hotel resort, the retail, the pedestrian retail center, the office space, and the residential component. Those businesses have no shortage of financial sponsors that are ready, willing, and able, and lining up, quite frankly, to finance those elements. Then if you look at the non-traditional uses that comprise the Waveyard Master Plan, what I'm referring to there are specifically the whitewater course, the surfing wave pool, and the scuba and snorkel lagoon. Those businesses are what we call non-traditional and do not have your traditional sources of capital that are ready, willing, and able to finance those businesses. So with respect to the second finding of fact, it is imperative, and for it not the incentive, we would not be able to physically and materially commit to the city, as we have in the development agreement, that we will build the minimum recreational improvements which comprise the Whitewater Center if that incentive were not to come into this project. And if you look historically at cities and how they've traditionally funded those elements, i.e. Charlotte, North Carolina, and McHenry, Maryland, with which both have whitewater parks as part of their recreational amenities, both of those cities have funded those businesses, if not 100%, almost 80% of the cost of getting those recreational amenities built and operated. So from our perspective, if it not for the incentive, we would not be able to finance this project. Therefore, we would not be able to commit to the entire development master plan, which is what we are passionate about building and what I think the city has been very clear in its intent of what it expects from us as developers. Thank you.
Mayor and Council, thank you very much for listening to us this evening. We urge your support on all issues on agenda item 10 and be happy to answer questions now or later whenever you feel appropriate, Mayor.
Any questions now? I'll certainly call you up
okay.
after we've
thank you.
Heard public comment. Does the city attorney want to weigh in at all on some of the issues that are listed under 10A through 10F and what documents go with them so that the public comment can be?
Yes, Mayor and Council, on item 10A, you're simply holding the public meeting or public hearing to discuss the general plan amendment as well as all other items. On 10B, it's a resolution to adopt the minor general plan amendment. This will require four votes of the council. On item 10C, it is taking action on an ordinance for a zoning case. That, too, will require four votes of the council for adoption. Going on to 10D, which is taking action on findings of fact related to the retail development tax incentive agreement. This is what Mr. Pugh was referring to under the state statute, which is it's 9-500.11. It requires certain procedure if the council is going to enter into a tax incentive development agreement. One of those is that the council makes specific findings of fact. And as Mr. Pugh indicated, it requires that the council make two specific findings of fact. The first is that the proposed tax incentive agreement is anticipated to raise more revenue than the amount of the incentive within the duration of the agreement. So the council needs to conclude that the city will receive more revenues than it is providing in tax incentives. And second, that in the absence of a tax incentive, the retail business facility would not locate in the city of Mesa in the same time, place, and manner. Under the statute, this requires a two-thirds vote of the council. However, because Vice Mayor Walters declared a conflict of interest, it is two-thirds of the six remaining council members, which would be four votes. Item 10E is asking the council to take action on a resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into the agreements for the sale and lease of city property. As Mr. Pugh explained, the city is proposing to sell 121 acres to Waveyard and to lease approximately 5 acres to allow for some additional parking in that area. This will require four votes of the council. And finally, item 10F is to take action on a resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into a retail development tax incentive agreement with Waveyard. This, under the statute, again requires a two-thirds vote of the council. However, because Vice Mayor Walters has declared a conflict of interest, it's two-thirds of the remaining six members of the council, which would be four votes. And the development agreements have been provided, as well as the purchase agreement. They're included in the packet. As I indicated at the study session, there have been some relatively minor changes to the development agreement. They've been provided to the council today and also made public today. So unless council has any questions, that's how we'll proceed through the agenda.
Okay. Which one has the call for the election that spells out who pays for it?
The development agreement states that the council will be asked, but that staff will bring forward to the council a call to the election before July 9th. So the development agreement contains that provision, but it does not at this point call the election. It simply states that council will be asked to call an election for the development agreement pursuant to Section 613 of the charter.
Okay. There was some discussion that there was an election called. I think there was some concurrence to make sure that that was paid for by the developers if it did not match an election cycle, and it appears that it will not match anything else that we're going to be putting on the ballot at this time.
Mayor, the development agreement contains a provision that the developer has agreed to pay all of Mesa's costs in regard to the November 2007 election. They will pay $250,000, which is the estimated cost of the election, on or before October 1st. If the actual cost is more than $250,000, they will reimburse the city. If the actual cost is less than $250,000, the city will reimburse the developer the difference.
Okay. All right. Any other questions at this time? All right. Let me go ahead then and go through the public comments. Because I am asking people to comment on all of the different 5A through F, I will allow 5 minutes. I have 10 cards, so that will put us at about 50 minutes if you desire to use your 5 minutes, and I appreciate you cooperating with me on that. The first speaker would be Diane Woods.
Is that 5 minutes at least?
Yes, Diane, it is.
Wow.
Is that too much?
Well, I don't know. You know how disjointed I talk. So hopefully I won't be that bad. I put down a bunch of notes, and hopefully I can read them, too. Some of them go back and forth between, and some questions I'd like to have answered by the developer. Some of them are positive in favor, some are not. Does this mean we're going to lose our car dealership, too? I hope not. And I'm hoping this park means everything I saw, it looks like it's going to be for very athletic people to use so that it won't take away our taxes from Golfland Sunsplash, where families with little kids and so forth and different people can use. So I'm hoping that that is going to be for real athletic people. Also, though, for people who aren't athletic or who don't want to do it at the time, do you have to pay to get in to use the restaurants and the walkways and everything? Or do you, it sounds like you get to use them, just go in for free, but you use the water park and the different things and then you pay. But I'm not certain on that. Also, I was wondering, 10 stories. I know the airplanes go over that area. Have they checked, and I don't mean with the airport, but have they checked with pilots? Is 10 stories going to work, or is it going to be too tall? I have no clue. But it would be nice to know that. Also, the configuration, oh gosh, it's hard to talk when you look at the screen, but the configuration up there, that was up there, it looked like they were going to take away the parking almost completely to the park, and I heard they were going to share parking. If they're going to share parking, which actually I don't want them to share parking, but what I would like to see is them to use the light rail area and use a shuttle instead of share parking, because the park really needs its own parking. If you've ever tried to share parking on something like that, you need to have your own parking. And I won't go into all detail because who knows, I might take up the whole 5 minutes. The other thing is, oh, gosh. Like I said, I'm hoping I can read my notes. Now, the wave pools, from what everything I understand, the wave pools will end up being a loss leader for the area because they'll be too costly for what they could go ahead and charge people to reasonably use them. So they're going to make the money on the restaurants and the resort and different things like that, which is okay as long as it doesn't hurt, you know, the park and so forth to me. Sorry, just like I said, I'm trying to read my notes. Oh, gosh. I almost feel like they're either playing poker or chicken with the city. This Arizona is about the best place to put this. I know they have one in the south, so that's great too, in the southeast. But here in Arizona, the valley is the center of Arizona, and that spot is virtually the best place in the whole valley to put something like that. So even though they're trying to tell you it's not worth very much, they know that is worth a lot. The traffic flow, there's so many good things about that spot that they're getting a really good deal if they get their park in there. And I know they know it, even if they're pretending they don't and they're doing us a favor. I don't have a problem with the incentives because it's reimbursement. What else? Oh, gosh. What I do have a problem with is I went to the first few neighborhood meetings. I didn't go to all of them because it sounded great, and I thought, okay, that's fine. Less meetings to go to. But on the first neighborhood meetings, they promised that the ball fields would be up and running before they would start anything there. The new ball fields, the moving and so forth of that. And everything I understood, it was going to be exchanged with the city for being able to put the park, I mean, their wave thing in. They were going to exchange it with the city to put in our ball fields and replace everything that they took away. And now they're trying to say the city's going to have to do it, and I ran out of time. I used the whole 5 minutes.
You made it through the
okay.
5 minutes.
I'm sorry, but I really want to know. I want
the
promises.
I think we have questions written down. He'll respond at the end.
Oh, well, right. They're going to have even harder time reading my writing.
Thanks, Diane.
All right, thanks.
Jacqueline, I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name.
Pettit.
Jacqueline, please.
First of all, thank you very much for having me take this opportunity to come and speak with you this evening. I am in favor of the Wave Yard. My family and I moved out here about 6.5 years ago, and we have since embraced what Arizona has to offer. My husband has an incredible job. I'm a full-time honor student at ASU. My daughter is a member of the MCSO Explorer Post. My sons are very active in the scouting situations here, and my youngest daughter thrives with the Mesa Arts Center. This is not going to be a Walmart situation, and I am so excited. You can go to Walmart anytime you want to. You can't go to Wave Yard anytime you want to, but you can unless you, if you say yes here. And I'm very excited for it. We've done what we can to promote a good family lifestyle. That's what brought us to Mesa, and I would sincerely appreciate it if you would do your part to ensure that we can keep that family lifestyle in Wave Yard. Thank you.
Okay. Next is Tom Schulke, followed by Don Kinney.
Tom Schulke, District 5. State law creating a requirement under 10D is fairly recent. Read the law carefully to make sure it is followed. Part H requires the independent third party to verify the council's finding. Make sure you do not get this backwards. You cannot cite her conclusions as a basis for your finding. Her work is meant to be a verification of yours. Recent sales indicate that this land is worth more than $60 million. The present value of the city's retained tax benefits plus the cash and note from the developer add up to far less than the value of the land. Ask the city attorney if the discount from fair value on the land should be included as part of your analysis. The land price discount added to the developer's rebate or the sales tax exceeds the city's portion. This is a violation of the spirit, if not the letter of the law. State law also requires the council to find that a similar retail facility will not be built if the agreement is not approved. Rapid development at Riverview and the Tempe Marketplace suggests demand for more land. The fact that two developers have already shown interest in the land, which is not listed for sale, confirms the suspicion and does not support the finding you are required to make. The council needs to state why it believes developers will ignore this desirable property if it is not sold to Wave Yard. The third party has only stated that Wave Yard will not locate here and has ignored the similar retail business facilities that the statute says must be considered. When the city attorney just read it, she also ignored that statement. Make sure that you don't. The $30 million price you have negotiated for the land amounts to just $5.70 a square foot. Mesa recently sold 14 acres at Rucker and McDowell for over $9 a square foot. The site has a large hill that must be taken down, does not front the freeway, and as I understand, must be rezoned. 2 weeks ago, 125 acres of state trust land in Scottsdale was leased on a $68.5 million appraisal, or $12.58 per square foot, and the Bidwells purchased 77 acres of land in Glendale for $55 million, or $16.40 a square foot. Based on these sales, the fair value for the land is $60 to $80 million. You have two partial appraisals done by the same person for the property. The 26-acre appraisal is nearly a year old. The 99-acre appraisal is 9 months old. The appraiser noted significant market movement over the past years and in a London underlying 6 to 8% price appreciation. The appraisal was for $32.5 million almost a year ago. Okay, it's just almost 10% below what you've, above what you've agreed to, and closer to 20% adjusted for the time delay. Wave Yard is not required to close until January 2010. The city will not get the $10 million cash, and the $20 million note will not start accruing interest until then. This is a negative for Mesa. As I explained in a recent email, the present value of the cash promise plus the note is less than $25 million. Please explain why the council is considering an agreement that contemplates selling the land for 30 to 45% of fair value. I ask Wave Yard to do the right thing and pay a fair price. I hope the council realizes they appear to be hypocrites by deriding the perceived necessity to enter into sales tax sharing agreements while at the same time continuing to enter into them. When Wave Yard contacted, you should have told them that Mesa would not interfere in their negotiations with Surprise. Hopefully, Surprise would have returned the favor to Mesa at some future date. It is through cooperation that cities can prevail against the developers in this destructive little game you are playing. The council has lost a chance to show leadership among city governments. You are making the same mistake with this land as you did with Riverview. Development will come to this prime site even without a sales tax rebate. You continue to compare revenues to the city from vacant land or a golf course with revenue from development subject to sales tax sharing. The proper comparison for deciding if this development is best for Mesa is an alternate development at the site without a sales tax rebate agreement. Your economic development goals will be served by any development and not just a water park or whatever you want to call it. Now that you have rezoned the land, it should be easy to find another buyer for this prime property. I am not opposed to Wave Yard development. I simply believe the council should look after Mesa residents' best interests by not selling city assets below market value and by not entering into costly sales tax rebates on a property where it's not needed. If I got a few seconds left, I would say the obvious solution to your land problem here is to relocate the city park over the part of the land that has the underground easements. This will increase the value of land and make things better for everyone. Thank you.
Don Kenny, followed by Laura Bibito, if I have that right. Bibito? Bibito. Don.
Mayor Hawker, members of the council, it's a pleasure to be here this evening. I won't try and restate anything that the previous gentleman has already done, but we've been looking out in the West Valley for future sites, and we've been finding less valuable sites, shall we say, or lesser sites without the exposure that this one has or the access that we've been quoted prices more in the neighborhood of $10 to $14 a square foot. So the 5 million acres plus of this particular site under those numbers on the west side, freeway exposure, an off-ramp, some frontage, you're probably talking about 50 to 65 million. Okay, what are the gains and losses? I'm delighted that they're able to maintain the green space in the park and the amenities of the park because I live on the west side. I live at 249 North Westwood, so I live on the west side in Tom Rawls area, and I've lived there for, 23 years now. We came to build the Mesa Golfland Sunsplash. My family owns the three water parks, or at least operates the three water parks, as some under lease. There's some things, I'll dwell on a few things that might not come to light here otherwise. First, parking. As was alluded to, the green space will be maintained, but will the parking be maintained? Unless you have a tremendous symbiotic relationship, i.e., the water park as a primary generator is getting a lot of help from the other generators that are, let's say, feeding off of it, the hotels and the retail and the things like that. It makes the numbers of the water park don't make a lot of sense to somebody that's been in the business for 50 years. I visited virtually every water park in the United States over the last 20 years. We owned a few. That particular water park, if it had to stand on its own, without being subsidized by its partners, shall we say, would need about 3,500 parking spaces. If they don't have sufficient parking, that means the residents on the west side here are going to be parking up in the apartments and walking a mile to get to the park. So the green space doesn't value very much if you can't get to it, if you can't access it. We're very much aware of how a water park can grow and how an area can grow, and you find yourself struggling for parking and making deals and transporting people. We suffer that problem up in Mesa Golfland, and we've had to accommodate it by renting and shuttling and all sorts of things during our peak season. The other thing, I really think that the intent of the park is going to modify rider densities rider densities and liability issues associated with hardboards and wave pools are, well, we have a 150-foot beam at a Big Surf. We don't run hardboards because you can only run 8 boards on a almost 2-acre piece of water. Rider density is almost nothing. Liability is horrible. If you're, you know, I think this is going to turn into a family park. I really do, in order to survive. If it does, well, Big Surf is gone, and Sunsplash will likely turn into industrial buildings. So that might be a loss to you folks in the event that it does go in. We can move somewhere else. I mean, we'll get our money out of the land, and we'll move to the west side, or we'll move some other place. It's just life in the city. This happens. The other thing is, but beware of one thing. Sometimes when a park goes under, after a couple of years, the accounting can catch up to it. An $80 million park needs about, a good operator can bring almost 20% to the bottom line. If he can do that, you can bet that his supporters, those that are funding it, are going to want about 20% on their money. So he's got to make $80 million a year in order to fund that park if he doesn't get some rake off from the other entities. That means about 17,000 people a day, hence the 3,500 cars. And that is a 140-day season. We operate on about 110-day season. So that's even stretching your season boundaries. There's going to be a lot of people there. They're going to need a lot of parking. If it doesn't pan out, if they're not able to make those kind of numbers, then if they can't get that 1 million or 2 million patrons a year, and it fails, you might have the Walmart effect. Walmart moved into a lot of areas in the South, displaced the local businesses, and then after a couple of years, the accounting caught up with them, and they went away. Consider those things, particularly the parking. Thank you so much for your time.
All right. Laura, and then Greg Woods.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. My name's Laura Wiebetow. I live in District 5. With the very low interest rate offered, these two men, you would think they would just pay the $30 million up front for the 25 acres, but now I'm hearing that we're selling them even more than that for the $30,000, which I hope is not true. They can certainly afford to pay up front with a $400 million annual income and the sales tax rebate, and with a 2% lower than prime interest rate that they're getting, with voter approval, of course. My concern with the Waveyard proposal is that we may not have enough water resources for this type of major water consumer if years of severe drought persist. The public should be made aware of what steps Jerry Hugg and Richard Mladic plan to take to conserve water. I've heard about a black rubber lining, which doesn't sound very promising for me with our triple-digit heat. Only after these factors are taken into consideration and problem-solving proactive dialogue between Waveyard and our citizens can these issues be resolved. Keeping Mesa's citizens in the dark regarding excessive water use is irresponsible. I like the idea of Waveyard coming to Mesa. However, Waveyard should buy the property up front, fair and square, and present the people of Mesa with a water usage plan. By fair and square, I mean pay what it's worth. I just spoke to a major Mesa land developer who is a personal friend of mine, and he said we should be getting at least $10 per square foot. which sure wouldn't be any 30 million. It would be a lot more than that. Tens of millions more than that. Also, an estimate of potential profit for the area and our city would be appropriate to make available to the citizens of Mesa. Waveyard's going to use in one day close to the same amount of water as a family of four uses in an entire year. That's 127,400 gallons a year for a family of four. Waveyard estimates from their North Carolina locale 100,000 gallons a day. Many statistics came from the International Arid Lands Consortium, which is an independent nonprofit organization dedicated to exploring the problems and solutions unique to arid, that's us, regions with local members of this group from the University of Arizona. As with any investment, Mesa citizens deserve to know what they're getting in return for their investment, not just some deflated environmental impact figures and an inflated benefits analysis. Thank you.
Greg Woods, followed by Marilyn Winderstrom.
Honorable Mayor Keno Hawker and Council, my name is Gregory Scott Woods, and I reside at 1426 West Pepper Place in Mesa. I sent you an email regarding the loss of the 121 acres of PF zoning, and I hope that that email will not get lost in all the volumes of materials that you have. And I, in the interest of time, I would respectfully request that you consider the points that I make in that email. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Marilyn, followed by Charmaine McLeave.
Mayor, members of the council, Marilyn Winterstrom, 1112 North Center Street. I had raised an issue last Thursday, as had another gentleman raised the same interest, issue, and I had emailed the city attorney about this matter. It's a legal issue with copies to all the council, and I've heard from two council members that they were not able to open the attachment. Is that I've heard from those two? Have the rest of the council members not been able to open the attachment? Nobody. Yes,
I've seen it. I think there was
The city attorney did get it. Yeah. My problem is with the conflicting maps that you approved. So I'll just skim over some of these things that I had said on last Thursday. On May 21st, at the regular council meeting, you had two conflicting maps in your hand under two different agenda items, and you perhaps unwittingly approved both. The rezoning map that accompanied the introduction of the rezoning ordinance, and that has one configuration of Riverview Park. That map was posted again on May 21st, and it's still posted at the library and no doubt underneath the glass at the outside this council chambers. Anyway, that was one map, which shows the boundaries of Riverview Park. On that same night, you also adopted a notice of intent, which is legally required by the state statute, which had another map. And this was what Mr. Pugh was referring to, that with this linear quote park. What my point was that you cannot have one map conflict with the zoning map, which it does. Now, this is not the interior of the property to be rezoned. Rather, it is the borders of the property. I had here somewhere a copy of the of what is posted right now for the for anybody to see. That's a state statute also, and as I said, it is in conflict. Here we go. I don't know. in conflict with this thing that has the linear park, if you will, along 8th Street. This has a triangular shape on the west side of the entrance to Riverview Park. It's quite large, and yes, it's unfortunate that it does segregate the park, but it certainly does segregate itself from the rest of the park, but not nearly as much as this thing that was brought out at the last minute that was thrown in your council packets with the notice of intent on May 21st. It's often been stated, well, it was stated last Thursday at the study session when Mr. Rawls had asked Ms. Spinner why the order of agenda items A through 10A through 10F. And she responded that the zoning case must be approved first because the development agreement is dependent on the zoning case. Well, this is the zoning case, and what's in the development agreement is not consistent with the zoning. I would like to ask why there is not a copy of the zoning map that you're going to be approving tonight in that 113-page development agreement. In the minutes of the meeting, the planning and zoning meeting, which you did not even have in your packets when you adopted the introduction to this ordinance, because the zoning meeting was May 17th and your council meeting was May 21st. However, in the minutes of the May 17th meeting, Ms. Schimmel did say that, and she identified the reconfigured park, and that is with the triangle. So that's my problem, and I think the city does have a legal problem that you must include the zoning map inside within the development agreement, and I'm out of time. I hope you understood what I was talking about. Okay. Thank you.
Germaine McLeave, followed by Nate Kane.
Mayor Hocker and City Council members, for the record, my name is Charmaine McLeave, and I live at 445 North Ash Mesa. As some of you know in here, I have been at all the citizens' meetings on Waveyard, and I have been paying close attention to what was being told to us citizens. So I am here tonight to speak on the Waveyard map that was included in the notice of intent, which really raised, as you know, a lot of eyebrows on us citizens. I, for me, to let Waveyard know, and for you folks up here, the council, I believe this map for me is too incomplete for me to make a decision at this time. There are a lot of issues that bother me right now, and I think the council and Waveyard, because I have said several times that park is very important to me and the citizens, as you know how we've gone through two other issues. So just to let you know, and to Waveyard know, that I am going to reserve my judgment on Waveyard at this time. I hope the future information that Waveyard is going to provide me is going to be more positive than this one for the citizens of Mesa. And there's just one thing I'd like to ask the council, because I have not seen anything on it yet, maybe I missed it. On the piece of land up by the sewer plant that you are leasing, what kind of lease are you doing? What is the time span of the lease? Thank you.
Nate Kane, followed by Frank Elger.
Nate Kane, I'm in Tom Rawls' district. I tried to rearrange my notes based on the change here, so I'll just have to read them off. Disneyland was mentioned earlier. The original Disneyland was only 85 acres. It was orange groves, and they didn't have to tear down any parks or golf course. It was privately financed later through ABC Television. We all remember seeing Wonderful World of Disney. Disneyland doesn't have any condos, as far as I'm aware, and Disney did not build Cinderella's castle next to a sewage treatment plant. On the Riverview Park, I'm concerned about the finances, that it appears that we are selling the ball fields for far less than it's going to cost us to replace them. My understanding is on the appraisal of just the 25-acre ball field area, the that's about $9 million, and it will cost us about $5 million more to build four ball fields. So it seems to me a bad idea to be selling a ball field complex for far less money than we're getting out of the deal, and to be able to build a replacement complex. As far as item 10C goes, I had written down the word bait and switch. I think that people have referred to the linear park several times this evening, and you know how much I've been upset by that, because I know you all got my email. And Mr. Pugh's comments tonight seem reasonable, but I just can't accept them. He referred to, this is,
That area
there, where the entrance was, it was brought up by me and others at the meetings about how this kind of bisects the park and whether that's a lot of traffic going through there and all. So I appreciate that they attempted to address it, but there was never any indication that they were stretching out this linear park all along 8th Street. And in fact, take a good look at the map right now and memorize that number 8 triangle right there. I'm going to replace the map with the other one. That little triangle is nowhere near the area that it was on this map. In fact, the entire boundary has been moved down, which makes the park smaller, and it spreads out the linear park. So yes, they need to keep 28 acres total or thereabouts, and 22 acres is in the park, and the rest of it is 6 acres of wasted property along 8th Street. On item 10E, I was quite surprised that after we got the package of various purchase and development agreements last Thursday afternoon at 4, 200 pages to read over the weekend, one item that jumped out at me that I'm sorry about is that there's a series of side agreements in there, a wall agreement, a well agreement, and a park agreement. I would have expected to see this parcel detailed in you know, excruciating detail, and instead what we're seeing is a course outline of the parcel, and then a future agreement will be replaced, but unfortunately the development documents say that that is solely at the discretion of the city manager. Well, I've had a conversation earlier today, so I guess you'll need to be on notice that, yes, Mr. Brady will come to some agreement about another parcel, but I really think it needs to go by City Council again. I understand there'll be small little details that are totally appropriate, but for such a huge project, to have you guys rubber stamp a dummy development agreement and then have Mr. Brady fill it in a later time, it flies in the face of logic. I want to tell you that in the last year, I've kind of been, you know, thawing out a little bit on some of my concerns about trust and openness and fairness in city government, and having this development, having this linear park sprung on us at this last second. I mean, it's really, really thrown all of that out the window. I don't know why you would take so much effort to build up trust and integrity, and then to throw it out at the 11th hour for this strange linear park. Thank you.
Frank, followed by Hal Goodfarb.
My name is Frank Alger. I'm at 1009 North April Street in Mesa here. And I just want the council to understand that I support the park. I think it's a good. There may be some issues that we need to work out, but I think it needs to go to the vote. I think we should vote it in. I just want to remind everybody and everybody that's listening and are watching what Glendale has now that we lost. And unfortunately, I was new to the community. I moved in August of that year when that vote was going. But again, there's a lot of things. There's a lot of issues. I understand, and I'm going to say I'm smart enough to understand all those issues, but what I do understand is that this park will bring more revenue in to the businesses that are here than what we currently have. And I think that just based on that and you know, working out whatever issues, I think this is good for the city of Mesa, because it will bring not only monies into the park, but all the rest of the businesses that are currently here, our downtown area, I think it's a very good option for the city. Thank you.
Okay. Al? followed by LaRue Gates.
My name is Hal Goldfarb, 1351 West Juanita. I'm with the Mesa Greens. It's a part of the Green Party of the United States. If you're interested, mesagreens.org for more information about us. Living in the area and being concerned with various issues, you know, in our community, I'd like to just say a couple things. One of the things I was going to address is water, but someone beat me to it, and I just want to reiterate that, of course, Mesa Greens and the Green Party are going to be very interested in seeing how the city manages the limited water supply here. I know that groups like PERG have been working on projects where they're trying to urge cities to require that developers ensure a water supply, a 50 years water supply before doing development and so forth. I was involved with that very shortly. I guess as far as the car dealership, you know, I think the Valley has plenty of car dealerships. I'm not worried if we lose a car dealership or if they have to move somewhere else. You know, I don't go out and buy a car every day. It's not that big a deal. There's plenty of huge auto malls around. And the issue about, you know, what kind of people is going to attract, you know, athletic people and so forth, I'm less concerned about whether they're athletic or not. I'm more concerned about, you know, what sort of people are going to attract. Is this going to attract just kind of the hoi polloi, the wealthy East Mesa and Scottsdale crowds, or, you know, is this intended to be truly a public facility? I hear, you know, you're talking about free public access. I'd like to hear something saying that, yeah, it's going to be truly free public access. In other words, if homeless people want to go to cool off for a little bit, they can do that, and they're not going to be thrown out by the, excuse me, I don't mean to be rude to our police, I respect very much, but I just want to make sure that, you know, everyone really has access to it, and that if, you know, they want a shower or whatever facilities might be available to the public at large, that they're not going to be harassed or thrown out because of, you know, we want to maintain a certain ambiance or feel about it. I want to say, as a Green and also as a person who's very, very interested in urban development, I'm very happy to see that you're doing infill development as opposed to trying to develop more and more land at the outskirts of, you know, the sprawl mart thing. So that's a really good thing. I like the fact you're building up. I just hope that, you know, we accord the neighbors' wishes in that so that they're not feeling that they're being that they're you know, the flat one, two-story atmosphere is being disrupted or changed because of these taller buildings. I kind of like the idea of the linear park. I think that's an interesting idea. I haven't been to the planning meetings, but overall it seems like a very nice project, but I'm hearing a lot of concerns, and I truly hope they're all addressed, because I don't want to see the people of the city being feeling ripped off or feeling that their needs haven't been addressed. I don't think the linear park's a waste. In fact, as an urban planning kind of student, I kind of like that. I think it creates a nice visual buffer. I think it'll also be a nice buffer for the noise that might be generated from the cars and, you know, people and so forth. The only other issue that I was going to bring up, and it's just sort of an aesthetic thing, I'm a little disappointed that we don't see more buildings in this area that really look like the Southwest. I mean, the way the building new homes now does have something of a Southwest feel with the stucco look, etc. I looked at the pictures, and, you know, it's Mediterranean. I'd say it almost looks Italian. I'm kind of wondering why we don't, you know, why the facade, the scheme, the overall motif is not looking more like something from the American Southwest with its Hispanic and you know, the Mexican influence, Central American influence, etc. Those are my comments.
LaRue, followed by Bill Thompson. I thought you had moved. Are you still in Mesa?
Still in Mesa, but I just moved.
Pardon?
I'm still in Mesa. I just moved east.
Oh, okay. So. Oh, out on Adobe. Oh, okay.
Anyway,
West Mesa over. All right.
Mayor and member of the City Council, my name is LaRue Gates, and I live at 10457 East Adobe Road in Mesa, Arizona, 85207. I come before you today because some of the people from the west side of town have voiced their concerns to me over the last few days, and I have some concerns of my own. First of all, let me say that when Waveyard was presented to the citizens of Mesa, I was really impressed, and I reserved judgment because I no longer live in this area, and I wanted to see what the people in this area had to say about it because they're the most affected by what was happening. And so for the most part, I've just kind of sat in the background and just watched what's happening, and I've come to the meetings, and because I'm interested. My daughter still lives over here. I have a lot of friends on this side of town. And the neighborhood endorsed this project, as far as I understand, under these conditions. Number one, the ballparks would be relocated and functioning somewhere in West Mesa before the Riverview ballparks were removed. And number two, that Riverview Park would remain intact. And Waveyard gave the impression that these two things could be accomplished. Then at a later meeting, and I was at that meeting, the neighbors were shown a map where a corner of Riverview Park, and I don't have the maps with me, but this gentleman right here has the maps, where a corner of the Riverview Park that was up higher was going to be taken and put down adjacent to the park with a road running through it and still have that corner. And so there wasn't too much of a net loss to the park. And that was still okay with most of the neighbors. But however, after the study session you had last Thursday, I got a few phone calls from some concerned neighbors on this side of town saying, LaRue, help. And so I'm kind of speaking on their behalf tonight. And and all due respect to Mr. Pugh, he explained tonight that that linear park was in addition to the other stuff. But I still have some questions, according to this gentleman and the neighbors that contacted me, that that corner has shrunk. And then it looks like it's stretched out. So I think that needs to be clarified. Mr. Pugh says that it has all gone to neighborhood meetings. And from what I understand is that the latest change of the park was presented at a neighborhood meeting down at Kleinman Park, but not to the neighbors in the northwest area that is affected by it. And a lot of them didn't learn until after it came out in a newspaper or at the study session about this linear park. And that's what a lot of people are up in arms about. And so I think you need to be up front with the neighborhoods, maybe have another neighborhood meeting and let them know exactly what is happening. This is like we told Marty Dorito with Riverview, keep it honest, keep it up front, and numerous neighborhood meetings, and look what happened, we got it. But if you don't let the neighbors know, then I think there's something shaky going on and bait and switch, and they don't have a lot of trust. And so I think this needs to be done. And there is a concern about parking. Like I said, with a big project this big, is there going to be enough parking for that, plus being able to use the park? And if you remember right, you know, a few years ago, we took on the stadium because it didn't fit in that area. When they were going to develop Riverview, you know, the shopping area over on that side, it didn't fit in that area. And the citizens turned those down. And if this doesn't fit in the area, I'm afraid it's going to be turned down also. So we need to make sure it's going to fit in that area and everybody's concerns will be addressed. I know Mesa's counting on the revenue that the Waveyard will generate. I understand the synergy that there is at Riverview. But it's a moral question. Are we willing to sell out our future, our birthright and our future generation's birthright for this, by having less free open space, and access free, because a Waveyard will, you know, we have to pay to use those facilities. And from what I understand, as far as the ball fields going to Kleinman Park, which I understand they're going to do, there are only two ball fields there. We have four at Riverview. If you move two or three over there, we're still at a net loss of one or two ball fields. So there's not a real fair exchange there, and we also lose open space, park space, to these ball fields. And there's a net loss of space, not a net gain. And once these open parks and spaces are gone, they're gone forever. A growing city needs more parks space, not less. And so I've got the feeling from the neighbors I've talked to that we're kind of duped into a shell game here. And I speak for them. So make it right as far as our parks are concerned. Let the neighbors be informed what's really happening. So I'm really glad it's going to a vote. That way the people have their say, and whatever happens, it happens, and so be it. So but, you know, make it right as far as our parks are concerned, and don't sell out our birthright for just a mess of pottage. And I thank you.
Bill Thompson and Marion Whipple. Next. Bill?
Mayor, council members, thank you for giving me the time to speak to you. My name is Bill Thompson. I live in District 1. And I was born in Arizona, actually, and born in Mesa. And I have lived overseas as a youth and a young adult, and each time I've come back to Mesa. I love Mesa. I love the Valley. Did my education here, college, graduate school, and each time I've come back to Mesa, and I live here now. I want my kids to grow up here, and I think this is a wonderful opportunity for Mesa to bring, for me personally, I guess I am kind of selfish. I see a lot of the activities and events that I did overseas coming here to this Waveyard Park, and I'm excited about it. Scuba diving, for example, you know, a lot of the scout troops that I grew up with living overseas, we scuba dived, and I've already told a lot of them, hey, there's a place to come here now, and so we've got some out-of-state people scheduled to come here. I also wanted to say that I think, thanks for reminding me that I am an Eagle Scout, because I think it's a great opportunity to get the scouts involved here. I counted about 10 merit badges that can be passed off in this place, and I think we can appeal to that and the youth and opportunities for education in there as well. So, again, I'm for Waveyard, and I appeal for your vote, too. Thank you.
Bill, thanks again for doing the pledge. Marion Whipple.
Mayor, we've got to take a row out of these things and spread them out. I'm too fat to get through them anymore.
Run for council. These are a little bigger up here.
I used to be able to get through those, but I don't know. That Waveyard, I would be more like a bobbin floating around than anything. Anyways, there's a few things I wanted to talk about tonight. Number one, when the first public meeting was made, I attended that meeting with a great deal of skepticism as to what the intent was in the process. And what I saw interested me, but there were some questions that were asked that night. And one of the questions that was asked was particularly about the ball fields. And the commitment was made by the developers that they would move those ball fields equal. It would be ball field for ball field. And that commitment was made, and I accepted their word that that would be the case. Now, I'm understanding that's not the case. So that's one issue that takes a check mark against them. Item number two that I can think of is they also mentioned in that meeting that the park would be left alone. And as I watched here tonight, I became aware of this this afternoon as to what was going on and what had been proposed. And as I watched their projection here, and I see that this area along 8th Street as a, what did you call that, a lateral park or whatever it was?
Lineal park.
And that looks to me like it's right on the street of 8th Street. Now, I don't know about any of you council members, but would you let your children play right along 8th Street? I wouldn't let mine play right along my own residential street, much less along a busy highway. And 8th Street, if you've sat and watched the traffic in that in the mornings and the evenings and throughout the day, that place covers a lot of traffic. One question I have that I would like answered tonight is, what is the percentage of this rebate? I've not seen anything as far as a percentage of the city, what the city's expecting to give back to the developer, what they're going to get for what they give in. I'm not used to these 5 minutes, Mayor. This is a bit much. I wrote shorter notes. Okay. I'm sure of this. I'll have to write more letters next time, see what I can come up with. Okay. The things that I don't like about what I'm seeing tonight is how they're moving this park. If the developer is going to take this type of solution in saying we're going to keep acreage or add acreage to the park and make it in this manner, then I'm going to have to take a position against him. Right now, I'm still waiting to see what the final outcome is going to be. And when it goes to the poll and anything that comes up in the poll or the elections, if they don't correct that or make that right, then I'm going to have to do vote against it. Same with the ball fields. The other thing is the parking that's been brought up several times. No, on the map, I didn't see anything listed for parking. It didn't make any sense as far as that goes. So I would like some further explanation on that if we could tonight. I don't know what kind of time we have, but those are my concerns. If these can be addressed properly, especially this park and parking and the lineal park issue, then I think this would be a good project. If it's not going to be addressed that way, then I'm going to have to start looking at opposing this whole situation. Thank you.
Okay. Do you have any other cards on items dealing with this issue?
I do not, Mayor.
All right. Was there anyone else that came this evening that wanted to address the council concerning the wave yard issue? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close the public comment period then. Mr. Pugh, I think several questions were raised, though. Do you want to address those at this time? And then I have a list here of some items that if they aren't addressed, I may want to ask city staff.
Mayor, council members, thank you very much for an opportunity to respond to the questions that have been raised. I'll do the best I can to hit those quickly and efficiently. With respect to the car dealership is under construction today. If you've been out there, you've seen that. The car dealership is staying. I never implied, didn't mean to imply, that the car dealership was not going to be there. The car dealership group owns a very small portion of the land that has to do with the entrance to this park on the east side. And for that reason, they're involved as an applicant, and we've worked out a resolution with them on the site plan, if I can find this arrow here. Right here at this location is where we have worked out a solution for how to design the entry that fits their needs and ours both. So the dealerships stay. With respect to free access to the facility, I think Richard Mladic made that very, very clear, that the bulk of this experience as it relates to enjoying the restaurants, enjoying the shopping, and using the offices, walking along the boardwalk, all those experiences are free. What costs here is to use those portions of this project that are athletic, skilled events in nature. Those require a fee. So you can walk into the facility, you can sit and have lunch or dinner and enjoy all the amenities and see what's going on. But to actively participate in those clearly requires the payment of a fee. The question came up with respect to the FAA and the height of the buildings. We are required to obtain what's known as Part 172 approval from FAA, and that process is underway. And when you think about it logically, just move a little bit west to Tempe and consider the fact that there are multiple story buildings that are much higher than we're proposing, that are much closer to the airport and in the same pathway. So those structures have been approved. Clearly, we expect these to be approved without a problem. One issue came up with respect to the closing of this transaction in 2010 and the time value and cost of money related to that gap between the time this deal is approved by voters and the closing. That is a little bit of a double-edged sword, quite frankly, council members, because the reason for that is you as council members want to make sure that this project is going to happen. And for that reason, closing can't occur until those events I listed are in line. And to simply stand here and say that it takes site plan approval, maybe there's many in the audience or watching on television who think that's an easy thing and that'll happen in a month or two. Well, it doesn't happen that quickly. It's a detailed process. The planning department uses their professional expertise in reviewing those plans, and it takes time. Same thing with the design review board. And then you have the time involved in actually getting the working drawings submitted, reviewed, and approved, and permits issued. So I don't think there's anyone that would think that a two-year time period approximately to accomplish that task is out of line. And so that's why it's 2010. It's not that we're putting off the closing. It's that we're making sure you're comfortable that we're really going to perform and execute this plan before we close. And that's the reason for that date. The question raised about parking, let me again illustrate. On this plan, all of the parcels identified as parcel 5, here in the northeast corner, a little bit further east here, down here in the entrance area to the project, and over here on the far west end, all those parcels designated as 5 are surface parking. And there will be more than 3,500 parking spaces surface parking on the site. All of the parking for the resort hotel and for the residential elements of the multi-story structures will be underground parking. So we did not embark upon this endeavor and not think about where to park cars or how many there'll be. That's been very important and very focused on our minds, and we understand that, and that's how that will be handled. Various proprietary questions came up by a gentleman about operational and insurance and those kind of things. I don't really believe those are germane to the issue of a land use case or a development agreement. Those concepts and issues of operation, insurance, ridership, density of ridership, number of people and guests per day, we have thought about all those things, and we are acutely aware of them and how to operate. Let me just mention this, too. For those that are concerned or have a question as to how's this all going to come together, please think about this as a master planned community. You have a set of master plan developers who understand what they're doing and who fully understand that to make a plan like this work, you bring into the project those who have the expertise to deal with retail, to deal with resort hotel, to deal with the office components. And that's what you would expect out of Mr. Mladic and Mr. Hug in this process, and that's exactly what they're going to do. Water. We have thought about water. This is the Wave Yard, and it takes water to operate. The important thing for the citizens of Mesa to understand and for you as councils to council members to understand tonight is there is an independent source of water that will service this project that has nothing to do with the existing potable water in the city of Mesa. And it will not have a detrimental impact on any city of Mesa customers today. And so we've done that work, we've done that research, and that's an answer to the water question. We are not going to diminish water availability to the residents of the city of Mesa. Now, with respect to the issue of the conflicting maps, there has seemed to me this evening some type of a sinister plot has been discussed here tonight, that we as representatives of Wave Yard have somehow thought through this issue, and we're going to put one map one time and another one another time and tell this group one thing and another group that. That's the last thing we want to do, and that's not what we did. Let's focus on this for a moment. The map that is being considered for the zoning case tonight has remained consistent through this entire process. It is the development master plan that you see on the screen tonight. This is exactly what's being voted on. It has never changed. It's the same at the neighborhood meeting, it's the same at the planning and zoning board meeting, and it's in front of you tonight. That's the only exhibit that affects you as it relates to voting on this case. That's the zoning exhibit. Ms. Winterstrom was kind enough to show you a map of this, the zoning map that was published in the newspaper. That map reflects the boundaries of this property. The interesting thing about it, however, is that when you publish notice for a zoning case, the statute requires a general description of the location of the property. And that's exactly what that map was intended to do. This is a large piece of property, many, many acres. And in zoning cases, when you publish the notice of the case, it is not generally defined with the precision of a legal description. The legal descriptions get attached to zoning ordinances after they're approved. And that's exactly what will happen here. The unfortunate thing that occurred here, council members, is the map that was attached to the notice of intent. Quite frankly, looking back on it now, we attached that map so that it would clarify the location of the property from which we were seeking a tax incentive. Unfortunately, there are those here tonight who are taking that map, showing it here, and claiming that's a zoning exhibit, and we're asking for approval of that. Nothing could be further from the truth. That simply is an exhibit for the notice of intent, and quite frankly, it reflected our thoughts on how to refine the park area and, as I said earlier in our presentation, add additional acreage for the lineal park. We did not take the park, smash it into the corner of Dobson and 8th, like silly putty or glue and have the glue kind of ooze out over the edges. We have, as you can see here in this exhibit, and as I showed earlier, that is the park today, 21.1 acres. And this is the concept of what we think the park will look like at 22.2 acres. I don't know how we can possibly be more clear that we are preserving acre for acre in this process. We did not intend to show one thing and do another. I can see, unfortunately, what happened, however, with the notice of intent. I'm not sure the statute required that map to be put there, but we did. We published it just to make sure that everyone knew the area we were talking about. And if the city council or the citizens don't want the lineal park, tell us to get rid of it. Quite frankly, as I said earlier, we're paying for it. We're installing it, we're improving it, and we're maintaining it. But if you don't want that, tell us. We won't do it. That simple. With respect to the issue of we're getting a real good deal here on the land and the moving of the ball fields, let me turn to Richard Mladic to address those questions, if you would, Richard.
Mayor Harkle, council members, the issue of the value of the land was raised numerous times. And as many people are aware, and as we have moved through the waveyard process, we looked at numerous sites across the valley. We do not put ourselves before you as experts on land value. We know what we need to make, what we need to purchase land for in order to make this project work, what our financial projections for this project say to us about what we can pay for land. But in order to value this land, two independent appraisals, were done. Completely separate companies, one by Waveyard, as you're aware, and one by the city. Those appraisals both came back within $1 of each other, $1 per square foot of each other, and that was how the ultimate price for the land was arrived at. There are, as was mentioned, I'm sure that there are uses out there that may be able to afford to pay more for this land, like the car dealerships. It is clear that those are not the type of uses that the citizens of West Mesa have wanted to entertain in the past. I'd like to address one more issue that Mr. Pugh mentioned before with respect to water as well. The water source for Waveyard that has been identified is a city-owned well that is currently not part of the city's drinking water system. It is a well that is located on the northeast corner of the property, and this well is uniquely situated within Maricopa County. As we became aware recently, this well sits in an area of intense water mounding. The groundwater in that area has been identified by some engineers as being as close in some instances as 30 feet to the surface. In other instances, it's been said as close as 60 feet to the surface water. Evidence of this you can see as you exit the 101 freeway onto the 202 freeway. There is a riparian area that has developed off to the right of the two freeways there. That is not intentional water. That is not supposed to be there. The county would like to and is looking for a solution to rid themselves of that water. That is groundwater that is seeping up. We have a tremendous amount of water in here. The Maricopa County was excited to hear that we were actually going to be drawing water out of the ground in this area, because there is a huge amount of water that is mounted up in this area that is beginning to cause problems. So thank you very much for your time tonight.
Mayor, there was one other question that had to do with the percentage of taxes and the rebate and the incentive. I think that would be better answered by your staff who worked on that development agreement, and they can clarify exactly the percentage on tax if you would like to have the answer to that. With that, Mayor, again, we appreciate your time and attention and be happy to answer questions any of you might have.
Okay, why don't we go ahead and do the tax response first on the percentages that are in the agreement.
Thank you, Mayor and Council. This provision is included in the development agreement, and specifically Section 8 of the development agreement. There are three separate portions to this issue. First, with regard to the transaction privilege tax, or the sales tax, the City of Mesa currently collects 1.75% transaction privilege tax on activity. Under this agreement, and let me start by saying only tax generated from this specific project will be subject to the tax incentive. So we're limited just to this project. Of the 1.75% transaction privilege tax collected from this project, the City of Mesa will retain 1%. Waveyard, if they meet the minimum improvements and they open, and they will be entitled to the tax incentive, they will receive 0.75% of the 1.75 transaction privilege tax. Of the use tax, the City of Mesa collects 1.75% use tax. Of that use tax collected on this project, the City of Mesa will retain 1%. Waveyard will be entitled to 0.75% of the use tax collected on this property. Occupancy tax, or the bed tax, the City of Mesa collects 3% bed tax. Of that 3% collected on this property, the City will retain 1.5%, and Waveyard will be entitled to another 1.5%. And let me add finally that will end at either the term of the agreement, which is 20 years, or when Waveyard has paid the note plus the interest that has actually accrued on the note.
All right. One other question that was asked that I'm not sure had a response had to do with the ball fields and the finding of suitable relocation spots for those or the open parkland.
Mayor, I'm going to let Scott Rigby address that issue.
All right. I know the Parks Board has met on this issue, but I'm not sure that we've settled on relocation sites or even whether they're going to be adult or youth at this point. So why don't you fill us in?
Mayor, council members, you're correct. Parks and Recs Board is looking at this issue. We're looking at a number of different sites. Kleiman was just one opportunity to look at a site. I mean, there have been talk about even putting two more back into Riverview. That's just a concept at this point. I understand that Mesa Grande's interested in having a meeting also to talk about that, about what occurs with the remaining piece of parkland down at Riverview. So the city is committed that we're going to relocate those ball fields. And as a function of where we're trying to find that, it's a constant challenge to find park space in West Mesa, but we're diligently trying to find that space right now.
Mayor, let me just add, I think the answer is no decision's been made other than that we will replace the ball fields, and we're trying to work with the Parks Board, the neighborhoods, to come up with suitable options. The meeting that was held was just to begin the dialogue, and so we're certainly interested in any ideas that would help us to meet the needs of the neighborhood. So that's our final objective, is to let it work through a process with the Parks Board, the neighborhoods, the community, and ultimately bring it back to the City Council.
All right, Tom.
On the issue of the ball fields, would it be fair to say that Council has fairly strenuously voiced its intent to neither destroy the rest of Riverview Park or Kleiman Park in the process of doing that?
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, yes, they've been very clear about relocating those ball fields.
Relocating those ball fields in a appropriate manner that satisfies the concerns of the neighbors, satisfies the concerns of West Mesa, and doesn't either destroy Kleiman or destroy what's left of Riverview Park or any other area. That's just not the intent. That would be incredibly bad business on the part of this council. Isn't that not correct?
Correct.
Okay. Councilmember Whalen.
I've got a question for Scott also. In reference to the any meeting or development talks about the developer paying for the relocation of the ball fields. That was news to me. I have never heard that. Have you heard that at any time, that they've agreed to pay for any development of any ball fields?
Mayor, Councilmember Whalen, I have not heard that.
I believe the discussions have been the proceeds from the sale of the parkland would be used to seek out and relocate ball fields and any other park space.
Correct, Mayor, Councilmember Whalen. That's the intent in order to get the $10 million up front at close of escrow, is to allow us then turn around and build those ball fields in West Mesa and make improvements to the remaining park sites.
And along those same lines, we're going to receive $20 million plus 4% interest on the remainder of the lands. this council probably wouldn't be around at that time, but future councils with input from parks and citizens could use that $20 million plus interest to buy additional parkland because it was parkland to start with.
Correct, not only with that money, but the additional money that's not subject to the tax incentive could be eligible for that also.
Okay, just want to clarify those points so that people understand. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions at this point, or we'll start going through the items? Tom?
I have a couple of questions for Ralph. Thanks, Scott. The map that's up on our screen anyway, I'm just trying to figure out what you visualize. I know there won't be as the greater demand for parking without the ball fields, but where do you anticipate the patrons of the park parking? There's a lot of P's in there, but
the patrons of the park parking for the what we'll call for the moment the city park
exactly
will occur on that park site, and so there will be parking there just like today. There's parking between the ball fields and the city passive park, not an active softball park. Some of that parking is attributable to softball fields. Some of it's attributable to the park. And the same thing will occur on this site, Councilmember Rawls. They'll be parking on that site.
Okay.
Yes.
I just wanted to clarify that because if you look at your previous one, shows the park as it is now, the 21.1 acres, that doesn't include any of the parking.
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Rawls, you're absolutely right. That parking is in total, and Scott Rigby can straighten me out on that, is roughly 3.5 acres or so.
Right.
So there is about the same amount if you assume half for softball and half for park, which probably is not a fair assumption, frankly.
I don't think it's a fair assumption at all. I think you're going to have a lot more people parking for the softball
games.
We are. Games.
It's not going to take as many parking spaces.
The point is that you can fold in an acre or an acre and a half of that parking lot into the new park configuration and come up with essentially the same size park with parking.
That's correct.
But the point is the people who want to park in this utilize the city park are not going to have to compete with patrons of Wave Yard in lot number 5, which is just north of the park.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, absolutely not. You're right. We are going to design this in such a way that citizens of Mesa and or other communities who come to use the city park at 8th and Dobson will park there, and we're going to figure out a way to have people not park there and come over to Wave Yard.
Right. Well, that's the flip side, is we don't want people parking right in the city parking lot and then avoiding whatever parking charge they might have on their service lot.
And frankly, Councilmember Rawls and council members, the amount of parking spaces on the city park that will remain is going to be infinitesimally small compared to what we need for the Wave Yard project. It will make it inconvenient for that to happen.
Just one other question I want to clarify, and this is in response to Mr. Goldfarb's question about public access. I understand that he was asking about a different kind of public access. That is, anybody who wanted to could come in and take a shower, could come in and cool off by jumping in one of your pools, perhaps by taking a little surfing ride. That is not what is intended here. People have access to the restaurants, the outdoor, the walkways and stuff. But let's make it, the definition of public access got used in two different ways, and I didn't want anybody walking out of here believing that this was open to anyone who wants to come in and take a shower.
Mayor, Councilmember Rawls, you have described it exactly correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Other questions of Ralph?
Thank you, Mayor.
All right. Deb, first.
Mayor, if I might, I would just like to add to an answer that Mr. Pugh gave with regard to the maps, the notice of intent and the DMP, or the development master plan map. I'd just like to clarify that the development master plan is the map attached to these documents. It's specifically referenced and attached to the development agreement. That is stated in recital G. And the notice of intent is not attached to these documents. The development master plan map is attached both to the development agreement and also to the purchase agreement. And in the purchase agreement, specifically Exhibit C, which is the special warranty deed, it expressly states that the intent of the parties is that the project will be built in accordance with the development master plan. So the DMP map is attached to the documents. The notice of intent is not.
Okay. Councilmember Griswold.
Just to the city attorney, when you said the tax agreement ends in 20 years or so, you meant that after that time, 100% of the tax comes to City of Mesa from this about $500 million project of someone else's money they put into there.
That's correct, Councilmember Griswold. The incentive will no longer go to Waveyard. They will either have been paid off the $20 million or rebated the $20 million plus the accrued interest, or if that doesn't occur within the 24-year period, the incentive will end. And from that point forward, all in taxes will come to the City of Mesa.
Thank you.
I think the confusion is you mentioned 20 years in one statement earlier, not 24.
Oh, I apologize. The term is for 24 years, but they do not begin to rebate for 4 years. So I talk about 20 years and 24, but the term of the agreement is 24 years.
Okay. All right. Other questions? Councilmember Jones.
I just think it's important, too, to make sure it's clearly understood that this agreement is a sales agreement, $10 million down, $20 million on term, that payment is to be made every year, regardless of whether you've made that income after the initial construction phase.
Yeah, Mayor, Councilmember Jones, you're absolutely right. The contract provides for the payment to be made every year, regardless of. In fact, there's even another form of security for that with a letter of credit that has to be in place every year and renewed every year.
And I think it's important for the public to understand that. There is a payment coming back to the city.
Correct.
The tax rebate is just a way of making that payment, but if you don't accumulate enough of taxes in that year, you still have to make the payment to the city to pay off that note.
That's absolutely right.
And it's just an important part of it.
Councilmember Rawls asked me a question with way too many P's in it. Can I clarify it for just a second on parking on the city park? And that is, let me find this right here. On the city park today, right here where the cursor is, there is parking around the existing soccer field, which amounts to about 0.6 acres if you took it all in total. So there is parking there, and it is included in that 21.1 acres. And I just wanted to make sure you understood that. It was the parking, Councilmember Rawls, north of that you and I were discussing.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Mike.
Just want to cover one thing. Jerry, Mr. Kinney brought up a situation, or Rich, about incredibly successful project, 100,000 people wanting to get into your facility. They may try to park in the neighborhoods. Is there something that you could assure the neighborhoods that either you will shuttle, you will do whatever necessary, find Indian land or wherever to park your customers rather than allowing them to park in the neighborhoods?
Mayor Hawker, Councilmember Whalen, absolutely there is. Mr. Kinney addressed the need for up to 3,500 parking spaces for this type of facility. I believe at our current estimate, we're at approximately 4,300 parking spaces for this facility. In addition to that, we have plans in the facility for a shuttle service to move people through the project. As you can see, it's a very long site. So there are current plans for shuttles and for people movers within the project. That could very easily be expanded to shuttle people to off-site locations. And what I could say to that is, you know, I hope that that's a situation that we do have to address.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, let me go ahead and move on to item 10B. This is to take action on the following resolution, and this is for the general plan minor amendment 07-06 in District 1, the 2000 through 2600 block of West 8th Street, north side, north of the 202 freeway, and City of Mesa Reclamation Plant, 125 plus or minus acres. This is a minor general plan amendment of the Mesa 2025 general plan land use map and parks and public semi-public general land use map from parks and public semi-public to mixed use / residential. This request will allow a mixed use development, and the owners again are the City of Mesa. Let's go ahead and we've had some discussion. I do have a motion by Councilmember Griswold, seconded by Councilmember Whalen, for approval of the minor general plan amendment. Any further council discussion? Councilmember Reynolds.
Just as we've taken the public comment on these items sort of in combination, I'm going to wait till we get to 10D to explain why I'm going to be voting aye on these matters, but they're all lumped together in my mind. Each one rides the other, so I don't want people to think that we're just going to start voting yes without giving you, at least I'm not going to give reasons. I'm just only going to give them once, and I think that 10D is the best place to give them. So,
okay. Other questions, comments at this point? I'm going to go ahead and do my comments now, and then I'm going to be actually supporting all of those before us this evening. My greatest difficulty is still the whole nature of any type of tax incentives, because I really don't like playing that game. I wish there was something nationwide in the United States that said businesses have to do it on their own and they ought to not come to government for some type of financial support, no matter what type of business they are. Defense contractors to retail projects to auto dealers to sales tax generators, whatever it might be, because we're playing this game of one city against the other, one state against the other, and international, I guess, one country against the other. That being said, I have played a lot of sports, and once the rules are defined for the game, whether it be basketball or football or anything else, tell me what the rules are, and then I'm going to indulge in the game. And right now, the rules are that the competition is offering incentives. And if you don't do that, you still have to do it with your eyes open and make sure you don't give away the store where it's a negative. And I think we have some parameters set to make sure that's not the case. So reluctantly, I'm going to go forward with the support of this project. I think that the merits of the project and what it'll add to this section of Mesa are, if it's built with the way we see it defined today, it will be a real attraction for West Mesa and for Mesa overall. I think that could be kind of the corner that helps redevelop some of that area of Mesa. I think we've got wonderful things going out at Williams Gateway and the far southwest Mesa, and this would be the north, well, this is northwest, I guess that's southeast Mesa, this would be northwest Mesa. So I think that with the Bass Pro Shop coming online, which is another one I had to swallow kind of hard to even get over, and this one, I think that we will have a great synergy for this area of Mesa. Whether you needed it or not, you know, that's one that we're going to address. I think there were other competition, other cities that were saying, Mesa, if you bow out, we're going to be there, and maybe even offer more than we did. I think when we get to the amount and whether we are in a win position from offering the incentives, I think just the number, if you're retaining 1% and giving away 0.75, if and only if they generate it, and with some guarantees that they have letters of credits that they'll make the payments, I think the legal staff has done a wonderful job of creating documents that are favorable to the city and protect our best interests. So I don't like incentives. If there's a way to eliminate them, again, statewide and countrywide, I will be a supporter of that. But if that is the game that's out there, I'm going to be a player. And this is one that I think has enough merits to it that I will be supporting the incentive package that's being presented this evening. Councilmember Griswold.
Yeah, I'll piggyback on your analogy because I've said it in the past. It's like electing me the high school quarterback and I sit down on the field every play because I don't like the rules. The neighboring cities around us have been taking some of the best projects and the best development and using incentives to actually drain our sales tax out to their communities because we wouldn't play the game, we wouldn't use the tools given to us by the legislature. So we're going to get in the game late. You know, we've got Riverview under, Bass Pro's opening tomorrow, etc. I'll be in favor of this. I don't like incentives. I wish we'd level the playing field and no one could use them. But until they do that, I'll play by the rules given us. I think on relocating the ball fields, we have over 100 vacant acres out in the east side. We've got the BLM that can only use for parks that we don't have the money to develop, sitting out by Brown and the new 202 freeway. We could easily move those there. But we made a commitment to the neighbors in the west that we would keep them in the west area. So I'm looking, and we're looking very hard to find the right spot there. But we have a couple hundred acres now that we've got in BLM for that purpose only, and we don't have the money to develop them, so sitting out there. So I will support it, and I will protect the ball fields, make sure they get moved and moved in the western sides. I'll be in favor.
Thank you, Mayor. As a businessman and former bureaucrat, I don't like sales tax, you know? I don't like paying it every month. It's, you know, it comes out of my pocket, and it comes from my customers. I think sales tax incentives are a way for private industry to partner with government. You know, what they generate, they should be able to share. And that's why I think it, you know, everybody, and I respect your opinion, folks who say that you're doing it and you don't like doing it. People are not going to come to Mesa because of all the things that have happened in Mesa over the past several years. You know, when we lost a football stadium, I've heard time and time again, we lost a great opportunity to put Mesa on the map. Well, the football stadium wasn't right for Mesa. Mesa said, we don't want that. It wasn't right for Mesa. And at that time, I went to work thinking, well, what is right for Mesa? Well, we're, you know, we're kind of a redneck community, so Bass Pro just jumped right out in front of us, you know? And you know what? Bass Pro's going to open tomorrow, and it's going to do well. Wednesday. Or Wednesday. Also, it's a family-rich, great community. And what's better for a family-rich, great community than a family water park, than a family entertainment? Mr. Kenny's parks are full every day. My kids love going down there. You know, but this is going to be a little bit different. We wanted a resort hotel. I don't see anybody standing in line to build a resort hotel in this community at this point until these guys came forward. So when Matt and Richard and Jerry came forward and said they'd like to do this, I was really proud to want to work on this, because this is more of an identity for what we are. And this will help us move forward. This will give teenage kids some place to go rather than going to the boondocks. That will give people better things to do than hanging out and getting in trouble. It's good, healthy family entertainment. And I commend you for your vision. I hope it works. I know you've worked incredibly hard and had an awful lot of frustration getting it this far. But I wish you luck over the next few months as you try to take your message to the citizens of Mesa and show them what you're all about. I think this council believes in you, and hopefully you can get the community behind you. Good luck.
Kyle?
The opportunity we have here, one, I want to thank our attorney's office and those who have worked, Scott, to work on these agreements, and all the folks at Waveyard. We have tried very hard to protect the interests of the city in the long term, the protection that there will be payments made regardless of how successful they are. They have to make sure that we're getting that payment made, and that's important to me. What is concerning to me, what I've heard tonight, is a few folks have referenced the trust and their concern about a bait and switch or not being up front, and that it would almost be laughable if it weren't such a serious thing, because from the very beginning, this council has made certain that the ball fields were going to be replaced, and we were going to make every effort to put them in West Mesa. And our city manager has been aggressively trying to find the appropriate property to do that, and it has been a tremendous challenge, but that commitment is there for the ball fields. Even when we had the meeting over at Powell regarding Climbing Park, it really disturbed me that people were making comments the city was just trying to cram ball fields in and weren't making any effort otherwise to replace those ball fields, and it was absolutely false. And I stated it there at Powell, and it is still false. From the very beginning, the commitment was there, and we are aggressively trying to find the appropriate space to put those ball fields in. They're nitpicking about the park space, and we made it clear from the beginning that the park space was going to remain. The public park space was not going to be diminished. If anything, it's going to be enhanced. What we see as a conceptual outline or drawing is not a finished product. It's going to go through the Parks Board, the design, how it works, and we're going to make sure that it is in the best interest of the community to make that work. And so when I hear comments about trust and the bait and switch, it is very frustrating that people just somehow have to have a conspiracy theory that they're always working on, and it's just not factual. What we're looking for is the best interest of the city in the long run, and I think that we're on the right track of what we're trying to do, and I am supportive of this, and we will keep working, and even I've talked with Mr. Pugh before about, I'm concerned about the public park of the park, but we're going to make it in such a way to ensure that we have that public parking for the public park. That is a must. It has to work out, and that still has to be worked out in the design and detail. But I'm excited for the possibilities here, and we are doing our very best to be open and upfront about everything of this. And so those who want to persist in having some kind of a conspiracy, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Any other comments? Scott.
When I first saw this project, I thought there's one of four ways this is going to end, and only one way that's going to work well for Mesa, and I hate 25% odds, but that one way is that this gets built, it gets built as promised, and it works out wonderfully for the city. But there were three other ways that I considered that this doesn't work out well for Mesa. Well, there was one other way it works out well. Doesn't get built in Mesa, doesn't get built in Surprise, doesn't get built anywhere, and then we don't lose either. But the other ways, Mesa's a loser, and those are the ones that I'm most concerned about. One is that we have the same problem we had with the football stadium, and granted that may not have been the best use for Mesa, but it seems that a lot of projects come to Mesa, they approach the city, and for whatever reason doesn't work out. It's built somewhere else, and it's a wonderful success in that community. It'd be nice to be able to share in some success. And if I had to choose right now between the football stadium and this project, I'll take this project any day of the week. Eight football games or five football games and a possibility of some special event just isn't as exciting as having something operate year-round and generating excitement year-round. So I think this is a better project. The other part that concerns me, and maybe even concerned me a little bit more, and I think you'll agree with me as we went through this process, that we agreed to bring this into Mesa, but then it's not built to what we were promised. Or worse yet, we're left with another Site 17. The golf course is bulldozed, the park is bulldozed, the ball fields are bulldozed, and we're left with this big vacant piece of land to use for some other purpose that the neighborhood, quite frankly, politically, there's a political picture to be had here, the neighborhood isn't going to want. They have very specific designs, very specific ideas, which is why we come to that price. And I didn't want to be left with another Site 17. So that was a concern as well. And it left a lot of questions. I know there are a lot of questions unanswered. You know, what's this park going to look like specifically? Where's the parking going to go? How's the movement of traffic? Some of those issues, I hope that they're resolved by the time of the vote. But remember, there's still a lot of details to be worked out. So without those specific details, why should anybody vote for this? And what is it that the city did to make sure that we're not left with another Site 17 downtown of bulldozed property, no golf course, nothing happening on this site? And I think if you look at some of the protections for the city, and when we talked about these protections during our last study session, the gentleman in the front row over here, or our developers, turned a nice, you guys were pale, and I think you were going to pass out, because there are a lot of protections in this, and I think we're going to hear that again shortly. But the site plan is vague, is what you see, but the site plan has to come before the council, before a single blade of grass is turned over. We didn't see that in downtown Mesa many, many years back when there was another water park project, I think, was supposed to come down. Because we insisted that nothing happen here on this site without protections to the city, and one of those is has to be site plan approval. Another one is it has to go through the design review board. So have fun with that process. You're going to have to go through that site
Design Review Board. Mr. Pugh is smiling over here. I think he's laughing at you because it is a difficult process. It's supposed to be a difficult process. It's supposed to protect neighborhoods and citizens and make sure that the products we get here, the buildings as they are designed, fit in with the neighborhoods and we have a higher quality neighborhood. So you have that to jump through. You have to pay for all your minimum improvement permits. And last I heard, that was in excess of $1 million, I believe, or somewhere in that range, quite a bit of money before one blade of grass is turned over. And of course, you have to have that financial capacity and demonstrate that to our city manager and to our staff and attorneys who have done a very good job of protecting the city as well before we hand you the keys or say go ahead with the bulldozers as well. There are after title transfers, what happens to make sure that we don't get something that comes back at us that says, well, we started to turn over, we're digging the lagoons and it's looking good, but you know what, we'd be better off with two stories and maybe a three-star hotel and not a four-star hotel like we promised you because the money's tight and we can't fix it, because we've all heard these stories before, let's be frank. But that's in this agreement as well. Restrictions on the land use, if it's not built, that are strict and will be available to the public if they aren't already, I believe. The property reverter is in place until construction begins. The minimum improvements must be complete by a specific date before any money is returned to the developer. There's also a promissory note for the $20 million with that interest rate, and first position for the city if for some reason they default. We at least get the money back and we can go back to selling. And finally, as you had mentioned, Mr. Pugh, that there's the annual letter of credit, which you failed to mention is it's almost $1.6 million a year that sits there in an account to make sure that Mesa citizens get their cut first of the tax revenue that's generated. Because right now we have a golf course that generates, $50,000, $75,000 a year, roughly. And this is guaranteed to generate millions above what above the incentive. So I think that the benefits of this project far outweigh the costs. I believe that the city is well secured in making sure that before one blade of grass is turned over, that we get the goods that we were promised. I'm comfortable in that agreement, so I will be in support. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Councilmember Rawls.
Sort of been preempted, so I might as well do it now. I'm happy everybody did, because I just didn't know when we were going to do it, and now's as good a time as any. It's interesting, as we sit here tonight and listen to the comments that were made, it seems to me that there were two primary concerns expressed. One was the value of the property, and secondly was the process that has been followed and may be followed in the future about the park and the ball fields. And let me, it's interesting, no one has talked about the incentives, whether we should or should not do the incentive. Everybody seems to say, I guess it's a foregone conclusion, because nobody's gotten up here and say that's a ridiculous thing to do. You know, you might say, well, the numbers don't justify it because of the market value of the property, but basically nobody said don't do the incentives. And I have, as equal, if not greater, philosophical objection to the incentive process as the mayor does. But as I look at this project, I have decided that I'm going to overcome that objection because of the way the deal is structured. But let me back up, because I think there's something that's really important here that's being overlooked. Why don't we have the exact details nailed down on exactly how the park is going to look when we're done? Why don't we know exactly where the ball fields are going to be removed to before we take this to the voters? Why don't we do that? Well, we could have if we had approached this deal and if the developers had approached this deal a different way. And Ralph mentioned it in passing, but the fact is that we could have, meaning the city and the developer, structured this deal in such a way that it would never have to go to the voters for approval. And I will tell you that this council on this side of the table and the developers on that side of the table thought about that for a very few moments. And the conclusion was finally reached, I think, independently, collectively, same time, different times, that that's not right. We need to, whether Section 613 technically applied to certain portions of this project or not, that's not the intent. The intent was the voters should have the right to say yay or nay on these kinds of projects. So the decision was made, we're going to take this to the people. What did that do? That imposed one hell of a rigorous set of timelines that we have to meet, folks, because we've got to get this on the ballot by November. So the reason we don't have all the details is because we haven't had time to get all the details. But what's going to happen, whether it happens between now and the election or now and a year from now, is our public process, our parks board, our this group, that group, neighborhood meetings. You think these guys aren't going to be out in the neighborhoods again? Of course they're going to be out in the neighborhoods again. They're going to be out there soliciting your input, your desires, your approach to what they should do. And that's what's going to happen. It didn't have time to happen before June 4th, which is when we had to do this so that we could get it on the ballot by July 9th, so we could get it on the election in November. Because there is a time value of money to these people, and we can't just string them out for years. So there's a timing process, or there's a timing issue that has led to some vagueness. But it's not just up to, we're not going to let them dictate to us, and we're not going to dictate to them. The public is going to be involved in that refinement process. So those of you who have expressed concerns about the bait and switch, or the I'm withholding judgment, or I'd like to support it, but I'm not quite there yet, just watch what happens. You're not going to be excluded. You're going to be included, and this council is going to be very receptive to those issues. Now, there is a provision in this agreement that Nate has pointed out that he and I discussed that I think causes all of us a little grief, not because of Chris personally, but there's some provisions in there that say certain agreements, certain things can be approved by the city manager on his own. And we've discussed that, and that basically I think he sort of understands that the minor insignificant things that we couldn't possibly have thought of and therefore can't articulate, he can do. But if there's any kind of significant issue, both from a political, practical reality, as well as our desire, he's going to bring those back to the council, folks. They're not going to be things done in the county manager or the city manager's office that we're not involved with. So that's why it's a little vague. The process, however, is there to protect you. And the only reason we don't have this, and this is critical as this goes out to a vote, the only reason we don't have everything nailed down today is because everybody wanted to do the right thing and let the people participate. So, you know, Kyle mentioned those people who are concerned about conspiracies. The conspiracy here was we're going to do the right thing. We're going to take it to the people, even if it's not required. And I think this council and the developer deserves credit for that. Now, let's get to the details of this. There are some things with this property that easements, water treatment plants, locations, I mean, the neighbors are very restrictive on what they want. This is an independent appraised value. Two independent ones came together, came very close. We negotiated a price this council feels is fair. Maybe you might get something else, but that something else might not ever get approval from a city council for their buildings because the neighbors would say that we don't want that. I mean, Larry Miller tried that by expanding the auto mall, and neighbors said, no, you're not. I don't think that if my employer wanted to buy this property to mine it in a sand and gravel operation, that the neighbors would say, hey, there's a good economic use of the property. That isn't going to happen either. This is a good economic use of the property that the neighbors have said, on balance, we can live with, we like, we want, it helps, let's do it. So You can always say there might be somebody else out there who could buy it for more, but let's not ignore the fact that there are independent appraisers here who have come to a different conclusion, or that this is the highest market value at the time. I'm not going to recite everything I said in this Thursday study session, but let me just say two things on the findings. It is required that the economic benefit to the city exceed the size of the incentive. And I was the one that mentioned to Ralph the easy way to look at this is for every dollar that is generated, we get, or every sales tax, we get a dollar, they get 75 cents. That means it's worth more to us than it is to them. So that's an easy one. That's a foregone conclusion. The other one, you know, I had to be convinced on whether or not, because of this location, there is no better place in Maricopa County for this park than right here. And it occurred to me, why won't these guys come if I don't give them the $20 million? Okay, why not? Would you walk away from this site? You're going to build a $500 million project? $20 million matter that much? The answer is yes on one part, because the resort, commercial development, retail development, office complex, residential, yeah, the financing is there. But for something like the water component, number two on this lovely little map we have that I guess is not up on the wall there, all that water, the whitewater rafting, the kayaking, the scuba, the snorkeling, the surfing, there aren't lenders out there ready to say, hey, yeah, let's jump into this. This is new territory. Only been two built in the United States, incentivized by the local government much more so than what we're doing here. What we're doing here is a reasonable compromise to get the thing that makes this place special in place. You want to put a resort? You want to put commercial and office and residential and retail? You might get it through zoning, probably not, but you might. What makes this palatable to the neighbors, and what makes this work for the project and makes the incentive necessary is that very unique water feature. And Don, I don't think you're going to have any competition, because I think it's so totally different. I might slide down one of your slides. I'm not about to go down in a kayak, okay? Because there was a phrase a little earlier, they used athletic. Yeah. Those days are gone. But I think those two findings are there, and the protections are in place from the financing standpoint. The protections are there from the use standpoint. You know, if they don't do certain things at a certain time, we get the property back. If they don't do certain other things at a certain other time, we don't get the property back, but they can't do anything else with it but build Wave Yard, including the water feature. So we have got something that's in place that is... The only controversial part about this to me is the incentive. And that's only because my philosophical problems, and nobody seems to care about my philosophical problems, never have. That's amen. I like that. That's why I lose 6-1 a lot up here. But you know, the point is that part of the deal is constructed and developed as well as it could be. So I will be supportive of all six items, and if I've talked too long, I apologize, but this is the opening of the public dialogue and public debate and public discussion, and I'm taking my 2 bits worth of time to let you know how I feel. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. I think we've heard from all the council members. Let me go ahead then and call for a vote on item 10B, which is the general plan minor amendment 07-06. Would you please vote? The vote passes 6 ayes and 1 abstention from Vice Mayor Walters. So it does pass unanimously by those that can vote. Item number 10C is take action on ordinance for zoning case Z07-35, again District 1, 2000 through 2600 blocks of West 8th Street, North Side, north of the 202 Freeway and City of Mesa Reclamation Plant, 125 plus or minus acres. This will establish a development master plan with portions of the site requested to be rezoned from public facilities to C3, rezoned from C3 PAD to C3, rezoned with a bonus intensity zone overlay and a council use permit for residential uses within the C3 zoning district. This request is to establish the base zoning districts and land use for the Waveyard Development Master Plan, a future mixed-use development with entertainment, retail, offices, and residential land uses. This comes with a recommendation, a unanimous recommendation from the Planning and Zoning. And I have a motion by Councilmember Rawls, seconded by Councilmember Jones for approval. Any discussion on this item? Would you please vote? The vote is 6 ayes and 1 abstention, with Vice Mayor Walters abstaining for potential conflict. Item 10D, this is take action on findings of fact relating to the retail development tax incentive agreement between the City of Mesa and Waveyard Development. This requires a two-thirds vote, and we've had legal opinion that this will require 4 positive votes on it. Have a motion? Yes.
But before the council votes, and I apologize, I want to clear the record just so the record's clear. I did make a misstatement earlier with regard to the notice of intent map. It is attached to the development agreement for illustrative purposes only. But to clarify what that means, the parties clearly state that it is the intent of the parties that the DMP map will be what is developed. It was just attached for identifying the property involved. So before the council took action on these next 3 items, I wanted to make sure they understood that I did misspeak with regard to that issue.
Okay, so noted. Have a motion again by Councilmember Griswold, seconded by Councilmember Jones for approval of the finding of fact. Tom.
Just the legal issue. Do we have to vote separately on each finding of fact?
Councilmember Rawls, the statute doesn't require that, but I think it would be good to at least restate what the findings of fact are that the council is voting on. If the mayor would like, I could restate those.
Okay. Please, I know it.
The statute requires that the findings of fact be 2. The first, that the proposed tax incentive is anticipated to raise more revenue than the amount of incentive within the duration of the agreement. And the second finding of fact is that in the absence of the incentives, the retail business would not locate in the city in the same time, place, or manner.
And the motion maker, Councilmember Griswold, and the second by Councilmember Jones, is that your understanding?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion on this one then? Would you please vote? The vote is 6 ayes and 1 abstention, so it passes unanimously by those who can vote this evening. Item number 10E is take action on a resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into agreements for the sale and lease of city property located at the 2000 to 2600 blocks of West 8th Street, north side, north of the 202 freeway, and City of Mesa Reclamation Plant, 125 plus or minus acres. All right, this is a resolution authorizing the city manager to do that action. I have a motion by Councilmember Rawls, seconded by Councilmember Whalen for concurrence. Any discussion? Please vote. Again, the vote is 6 ayes and 1 abstention by Vice Mayor Walters. Item 10F, take action on a resolution authorizing the city manager to enter into a retail development tax incentive agreement with Waveyard Development LLC for the development of an entertainment resort and retail complex. This is a separate vote. I believe this is also required by state law now, right? And again, it requires 4 positive votes. Have Councilmember Jones making a motion, followed by Councilmember Whalen. All right, any other discussion on this item? Would you please vote? The vote is 6 ayes and 1 abstention, so it also passes by unanimously by those able to vote this evening. So, gentlemen, we look forward to a great development, and good luck on all of the different aspects that you have before us. We hope it will be a great partnership.
Thank you, Mayor.
All right.
Okay,
the last item is items from citizens present. That's on page 14. Do we have any requests to speak this evening?
Yes, Mayor, we have 3 speakers. The first speaker is Sandra Miller.
Sandra, why don't you wait just a second? Let's let a few people in.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Didn't want to miss my chance and think I'd gone home.
Doesn't sound like everybody came to listen to you this evening, though.
That's okay. Not a problem.
All right. Yeah. Oh, reading
yeah.
Before?
Yeah. I brought something to amuse myself.
All right, Sandra, please. You have 3 minutes.
Mr. Mayor and council members, I'm here tonight to talk about a state legislative session that was held on March 13th, sponsored by the House Democratic Caucus of the House of Representatives of Arizona. It was a partisan effort. You can't get much more partisan than being organized and sponsored by the House Democratic or Republican Caucus. What was disturbing to many of us who attended, and because it was state legislature, it escaped the boundaries of the city of Mesa, is that a Mesa City PD cop, Detective Matt Browning, was an active participant in that partisan political effort. Many of us did file complaints with the Mesa PD, Internal Affairs Unit, on that. Normally, those complaints are handled within the police department, but we felt that every member of the council, as well as the mayor, because Detective Browning spoke publicly, he represented not only the Mesa PD, he represented the city of Mesa. And so tonight, I've come, and I have an individual DVD to deliver to each member of the council, as well as an announcement of the meeting, because I think every one of you should know not only how it was announced, how it was presented, but you have an individual record of the speech that Detective Browning made. It's a DVD that every one of you gets a copy of. In addition, the people he spoke on the days with, because by being there and openly representing the city of Mesa, he participated and endorsed and signed on to that agenda. And it's disturbing enough to bring it to your attention. And so when I leave, I'm going to deliver it to the city clerk and have her distribute them. And I'm going to encourage every one of you to it's about an hour and 40 minutes. I'd encourage you to listen to it, because a couple of things he said were flat lies. I'll call your attention to one of them ahead of time. He talked about joining the Minuteman in April 2005. And he stated that he never saw so many AK-47s and AR-15s in his life, and that the Minutemen assembled at the Ranch Rescue Compound. Now, that is a flat lie. People as far away who watch TV in Australia and Germany knew exactly where the Minutemen assembled. It was at the Tombstone Tumbleweed newspaper office and the Miracle Valley Bible College. The man, I don't know where he was. If he was at the border at all, he blew it on that one.
Your 3 minutes is up, though. But
thank you.
I need to inform you that the way we work here, we have a city manager that handles personnel issues. We'll certainly look at your tape, and we can make comments, but that's how we...
Don't even want any comments. Just brought them so that you would be aware.
Okay. Next speaker, please.
Next speaker is Frank Elger.
Mayor, City Council, my name is Frank Alger. I live at 1009 North April in Mesa. Tonight I just want to just talk to Mr. Rawls again. last council meeting I cited some laws, Title 36, Chapter 10, and Mr. Rawls made some comments afterwards, and to be quite honest, I was angry. But then I got to thinking, well, you know what? I'm not real educated. I'm not a lawyer, so I don't know. Maybe he's right. And basically, what he said the Title 36, Chapter 10, that were not laws of the United States. And so I did some checking. I talked to several different lawyers, and just asked some questions, because it was my intent, if I'm wrong, to come back and to apologize to Mr. Rawls. I was not incorrect. There are laws, and what every single lawyer I talked to said, you can't prosecute him. There's no penalties for disobeying these laws, but there are laws on the books. Like I told them, I'm not interested in prosecuting anybody, but I'm just interested in finding out if there are laws on the books. The city council did swear to uphold the laws of the United States, and just want to express my disagreement with Mr. Rawls about not standing for the Pledge of Allegiance. There are codes, laws relating to this, whether they are enforceable or not. I do believe that as a sworn government official, he should abide by those laws. Thank you very much.
Last speaker is Jerry Walker.
Mr. Mayor, City Council members, my name is Jerry Walker, and I do reside at 113 South Ogden Circle in Mesa. And I apologize to Mr. Rawls, for missing the last council meeting. That you had made a mention of some things there that I wanted to respond to. You said that we had such different views of freedom that your response wouldn't matter. And I just wanted to let you know that we probably don't have a disagreement over what freedom is, but we do have a major disagreement over what responsibility is. And it's your responsibility, since you did swear to uphold the laws and the Constitution of the state of the United States and the laws of Arizona whenever you took office, that you are a city official. And one of these days, you're going to die, and you're going to be buried under that flag. I hope that whenever they put you in your casket, they put you in there with your arms crossed in defiance, because that's what you are, sir. You're a defiant individual. Thank you.
Tom. All right, let's take one thing at a time. Frank, I didn't say they weren't laws. I just said those laws didn't require people to say the pledge if they didn't want to. Those laws describe how you should say the pledge if you say the pledge. I don't deny that they're laws. I do deny that if there was anything in those laws that required somebody to say the pledge, they're unconstitutional. Supreme Court has so ruled, and I took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States first, and the Constitution says that no one, not a child in a public school, not a individual on a street corner, not a city councilman, can be compelled to say the Pledge of Allegiance if he does not choose to do so. I choose not to do so for the reasons that I have previously expressed. I am not violating any law. And if I am violating the law, I am upholding the Constitution by doing so. I would also say that I have another 50, there were 68 American soldiers that were killed since our last meeting. 54 of those names have been revealed. I was going to read them again tonight, but again, in light of the hour and the other comment, I'm not going to. But I don't know who was it on the council, maybe somebody on the council or somebody else, gave me this book after in January, and I was reading it today. It's got some lovely pictures of our flag. It's got a nice little history of our flag called Our True Flag by a PhD Flag Research Center. And the last sentence of his essay on the American flag I thought was worth sharing with you people today. It says, our principles, and above all, our lives as free people existing under just laws, must always be recognized as our true flag. Embodied in, but not limited to, the 50 stars, the 13 stripes, and the red, white, and blue of Old Glory. Captures exactly what I have been saying, which is that the freedom to not stand for the pledge is more important than the pledge itself. The freedom to stand for the pledge is more important than the pledge itself. And I believe, Jerry, that I'm being very responsible. And when I die, I will be very comfortable with the decisions that I have made about my opinions on this war and on my decision to protest this war in this manner.
Okay, that's the last item on the agenda. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right, we are adjourned.